Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.
Oh my God, what's that? What's that sweet melody in the air? It's like so much Mako coming down from a window. Oh, and it's like we're pulling the camera out and we are seeing that we are in this sprawling megalopolis, which was a word that I was afraid to say when it was in my brain before it exited my mouth, but I got the megalopolis of Midgar because here we are! Oh! It's a Final Fantasy VII podcast! Oh my goodness! A wild Final Fantasy VII podcast has appeared in your feed once more. Hello, everybody. I'm Josh Wigler, number one FF7 super fan in the post-show recaps roster. And I am so excited to go off on this very scary, visceral, adrenaline-packed bombing mission with the one, the only, soldier first class, ex-soldier first class, we should now mercenary. You may know them around the post-show recaps patron Discord as the number two highest leveled up member of the post-show recaps patron Discord. You know them as my friend and partner in crime alongside Jessica Leese on Mole Patrol over on Rob Has a Podcast. A real life avalancher, the great Brooklyn Zed, aka Z13, Zed, oh my God. Look at us.
I'm look here. We're doing it. It's happening.
Can you believe it?
Things escalated very quickly.
Things have escalated very quickly. Okay, hey everyone. This is a Final Fantasy VII podcast. Final Fantasy VII is a video game from the year 1997 that we're podcasting about here in the year 2021. Because Zed, that's where we're at this point.
Yep, that is very much where we're at. You know, last year you said that the Final Fantasy remake was the best thing on television in the year 2020. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and
I stand by that.
Why should 2021 be any different given the last week?
I stand by that take. Final Fantasy VII, I said the Final Fantasy VII remake released in the spring of 2020 was the best TV show of 2020. Don't at me. I stand by the take other than Mole, the Mole, the best reality show of 2020. But why are we talking? But that was a year ago almost now that the FF7 remake happened. We've got no news on when Final Fantasy VII remake is going to continue. And we did a few podcasts about it, but we've got no news. Why suddenly randomly here in the beginning of January are we talking about Final Fantasy VII? And like Zed, I feel like thereby hangs a tale.
Indeed. Also, time is a construct, and there are no rules.
They're out the window. Time is real when you have to escape the Sector 7 Mako reactor, and you've got a 20-minute time limit to do that in. But other than that, you know, time is illusory. Here's what's up. Final Fantasy VII is a formative storytelling experience. I know we don't typically do video games here on post-show recaps. We've tried a few times. It doesn't always take. This may not take. We'll see. We're leaving it open, but we're giving it a whirl because this is, you know, if you know anything about me, if you listen to my other stuff, Lost is my comfort food, right? I love the Marvel Cinematic Universe. We're doing Star Wars on a regular base. But the thing... that I probably most associate with just like purely for me comfort food type stuff is the Final Fantasy franchise created by Squaresoft, then Square Enix, and the games that they have produced, whether it's Final Fantasy 4, 6, 7, 8, 9. I left out 5 because it's not my favorite, but I know people love it. 10, which I know Zed has played, which we'll talk about momentarily. They've gone all the way up to 15, which I actually played recently and enjoyed and didn't think I would. These are games that I kind of like privately in my little corner. I play the shit out of them. I play them ruthlessly. They're very rich storytelling universes and worlds with characters who I love very dearly, with spectacular music, as you just heard, the great Nobuo Uematsu, the composer for the mainline Final Fantasy, is up until I think 10 is when he only does a few tracks, and then he's basically out. And I think that's a fairly significant indicator of like, oh, the shit's hitting the fan. If Nobuo's not here, it's not going to be that good. Because the music, Zed, I think you could agree, the music slaps.
It does. It does. It does.
Yeah. The OST is very, very good. And so these are games that I have lived with for a long time. I drop occasional Final Fantasy references. My greatest hope in life would be to find enough people who'd be like, all right, you keep talking about it. Well, I want to hear more about it. It's like, all right, well, I would also like to talk about it more. I also would like you to hear about it. What I would really love to do is like describe to you what happens in these games if you're never going to play them, because the stories are magnificent and wonderful and sometimes problematic and bad, but let's talk about them. And fun, and sometimes scary, and sometimes heartbreaking, and rich, just rich little stories, little pockets of story that I treasure dearly, and I would love to share that treasure with people. So I've been wanting to do this for a long time. Never really seriously thought that there would be any real, like, actual way of doing this on a regular basis, other than the few podcasts we did for FF7 Remake. But then Zed, the great Brooklyn Zed, there you are, prolific in the Post-Show Recaps patron Discord, hanging out and mentioning very casually, like, oh yeah, well, I'm playing Final Fantasy X right now. I'm like, excuse me? So what is this?
What is this? So we have only old game systems in my apartment.
Yes.
And
you
for
have PlayStation 2.
I am currently using a PlayStation 2. We have a PlayStation 3 that doesn't seem to be working at the moment. Unless I don't understand how a power button works, and I think I do.
Yeah.
So I was limited. I was limited to PlayStation 2 games, and we have Final Fantasy X in the house. So I was going to play Final Fantasy X.
You played a little bit of it.
I did. I played, you know, 4 or 5 hours of it, and I was incredibly bored.
Yeah.
And talking about it in the games channel of the Discord, that I was not impressed, not having a great time.
Yeah.
My only other experience with Final Fantasy, I've played Kingdom Hearts through to the end, and I understand that that is a Disney Final Fantasy crossover.
Yes, there's elements endeavor. Of Final Fantasy in the Kingdom Hearts franchise. It's like Mickey Mouse, it's Donald Duck, it's Goofy, and it's mother effing Sephiroth.
Like, spiky haired children.
And Cloud. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. For whatever reason.
Yeah, so I played those, and I played Final Fantasy IX to the final two boss battles that I'd never finished.
Yeah.
With no save point in between, which I have bemoaned many a time.
That'll happen.
Yeah. It's
for difficulty purposes. They want to challenge and frustrate you, and it often works very well.
And so the story that brings us to this point, aside from me posting about Final Fantasy X in the Discord, is that once upon a time, a good 5 or more years ago, a friend of mine was like, I want you to get into video games. I love video games, much like Josh has done now. And Final Fantasy IX is my favorite game. So I'm going to give you my Final Fantasy IX and my PlayStation 1, which is, for folks who don't know, about the size of like a portable DVD player. So it's easy to just hand somebody the device along with a CD case. And I played the game, and then we remembered that I could play Final Fantasy IX on the PlayStation 2 that was already in the apartment. So I gave my friend back the PlayStation 1, and with it, the first of the 4 discs of Final Fantasy IX, meaning I could never start the game over again.
Right.
And thus has been the problem. I played from a save point on the memory card at one point, somewhere in the middle of the game, but I've never been able to start it over. And Josh Final Fantasy IX.
It's hard to hop into the middle of it, right?
Like, you don't know where you are. You don't know where you're supposed to be going.
These aren't these aren't shoot-em-ups. They aren't first-person shooters. You know, it's not like a puzzle game. It's not like an iPhone game. Like, these are sprawling narratives of, like, the Star Wars scale. So you can't really just, like...
There's not really a blinking beacon on the map saying, here's where your next mission is, go here when you're ready, which is my only other familiarity with gaming, really, is I've actually played a few first-person shooters to completion.
Far Cry, right?
I've played Far Cry 3, I played the first Red Dead Redemption early in lockdown. That
Red Dead Redemption.
Yeah, and Assassin's Creed Black Flag, because I love pirates.
Pirates, yeah. But you did, you mentioned this story. And then, like, and I think, like, you mentioned it a while ago. I was like, I own FF7, FF8, and FF9 for PlayStation. Like, I was very into Japanese role-playing games. It's, like, my favorite video game genre. I have played so many. I've played a ton in the last year. It's been, like, a big mental health boon for me is, like, when I'm not working or whatever, like, I just, like, sink hours into a role-playing game. And I love it, and it's immersive, and it's really not for everybody, but it's very much for me. And so, like, at that point in my life when these games were coming out, like, I was very into them coming out, like, right away, like, immediately as they were hitting shelves, and, like, a bunch of other games too. So I held on to those for a very long time because they're treasured artifacts for me. Is my original copies of FF7, FF8, and FF9. And because my brain has been addled by many things over the course of the years, I can't quite tell you if those are all totally my copies or if they're, like, hand-me-downs from friends too. Like, there is some element of that because I had a bunch of friends who, like, I would play these games and they would play them as well, and we would compare notes and we would talk about the story. And if someone was like, oh, I don't have FF9, like, oh, I'll switch it with you. And so over the years, I think they all got, like, cross-contaminated, but I at the very least have ended up with FF7 through FF9. And so, Zed, you live very close to where I live. I was like, Zed, I'm bringing them to you. I'm bringing you these games because Final Fantasy X is not for you, but Final Fantasy VII is extraordinarily your shit, I think, if you are even lightly interested in Final Fantasy. Those who do not know, Brooklyn Zed, a.k.a. at Hard Rock Hope on the mean Twitter streets, I think a game that is very much, like, anti-capitalist, pro-environment, and the dangers of what happens when too few people hold all the power seems like it would be extremely your shit. And I said, I think that you should stop playing Final Fantasy X, and I think that you should start playing Final Fantasy VII. And so you did.
That is exactly what I did. And you were right. It is very much my shit. And even if the first five, what you thought would be 5 hours, took me 8.5 hours. I have gotten to our first stopping point in the story. So I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm texting. Doing my you best.
You're doing great. You're doing great. We've been texting, and, like, I've been getting your takes via text. Simultaneous to all of this is, like, we want to do Mole Patrol again at some point. We're really focused on post-show recaps right now, so it's just a matter of, like, figuring out where can we do Mole Patrol, because it's a real endeavor. It's an undertaking. But you and I haven't been podcasting nearly enough, so it's like, well, what can we podcast about? I was like, I want to get your takes. I think this is the opportunity. I think this is it. I think we could talk about Final Fantasy VII. We can tell people the story that they are missing out on. Perhaps this will encourage people to go and play it. There's, like, 1,000 different ways to play these games. If you've got Steam, if you've got PlayStation 4, if you've got Nintendo Switch, there have been re-releases, not even talking about the remake of Final Fantasy VII, but, like, the original PlayStation port of Final Fantasy VII has been ported to these current generation platforms. And they also, Zed, and this may make you jealous and angry, these ports have it so that, like, you can basically make your characters invincible. You can basically make it so that, like, you can move everything at, like, double speed so things go faster. You could basically make it so that your characters don't ever have to have a random encounter on the battlefield. If you really just want to get the story and rush through it pretty easily, it's very highly doable. So if that sounds interesting to you, I'd recommend it. Unfortunately for you, Zed, you're going to have to play it the old-fashioned way, which I think that's great.
Well, I think being invincible sounds boring.
Yeah.
For the sake of the game, I would love to be able to walk a little faster, but other than that, it's, you know, I'm okay with it the way that it is.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what's up. We're gonna talk through FF7. Zed has played through a very specific point in Final Fantasy VII. The first, as I told them, about 5 hours of the game takes place in basically one location. Took you about 8.5 to get there.
Yes.
And I've done some like approximating in my mind based on that. It's like
what that means.
You're on like a 3.5 hour delay.
Well, part of it is because I don't play these kinds of games a lot, my eyes are not necessarily adjusted to what I should be looking for in terms of entrances and exits or how to navigate like ramps and stairs and things like that. So I spent a really long time in the train graveyard running around trying to figure out how to get up something.
There's a train graveyard, by the way.
And it looked like a hole in the ground to me, but was actually a ramp. So I kept running around it and I needed to go up it. And that kind of thing, in a place where you will have random encounters, can then make the game take a lot longer because you
take a few steps and you have to do. Yeah, but you're leveling up, right? You're grinding levels by accident.
Leveling like crazy, just like in the Discord.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what's going on over there. So you have to play it the old-fashioned way. It's taken you a little bit of time, but you've reached, I think, what is the first natural story point, stopping point, to the degree that Zed, they made the Final Fantasy VII remake that was released for PlayStation 4. You know, however many, you know, decades and change later, takes place entirely in this first portion of the game that you've played. They elaborate everything that you just played into like a full 40 some odd hour game that I have sunk 100 hours into because I'm disgusting and I'm sick. And I got 100% completion on it, and it is the first game that I've ever done that for, and I'm very proud.
See, that makes me feel good. I love 100% completion.
Yes. Well, that's another reason why I think like a game like this is going to be fun for you, because there's a lot of weird nooks and crannies, and I don't want you to look anything up. I will be your guide. I already told you that you're getting relatively close to an opportunity to find a bonus character, and unlike I know that you like to talk about how there was a bonus character in Final Fantasy IX that you missed, you would have had to encounter that person eventually, and you did at the point that you encountered that character. That's not a skippable character. I'm talking about a fully skippable character, so I will guide you through claiming that character. What we're going to do here is we're not going to do spoilers. This is spoiler-free. We will talk through the story of FF7Z from like your perspective of how you're viewing the story, how you're interpreting the story so far. I'll talk about the game from like the thematic level and like the very matter-of-fact, these are the events, just the facts, like this is what's happening, to describe it out for people who don't want to play. But we're not gonna talk about anything further down the line from where you've played, preserving all of the surprises. This is reverse Mole Patrol.
Yes.
Where it is now me who holds the cards.
Yes.
And you who's experiencing the story for the first time. And that'll be great. And because we're gonna be doing this at certain stopping points, and I'll reveal here at the end of this podcast where I think the next stopping point should be. We're stopping short of saying this is like a weekly podcast. We have no schedule. We have no schedule other than your play schedule, Zed.
Incredible. I love it. I love that. That feels
like,
great.
I don't think that we'll have like a... I don't think that we should ever have like two FF7 podcasts in a week, but if it becomes weekly, if it's trending that way, that's great. If it's like once a month, that'll be fine too. If it's once a year, whatever it is, you know, we'll chart it. So that's the schedule. That's the spoiler rules. If you want to hit me up about FF7 specifically, I have a few recommendations for you. One is, in the spirit of Mole Patrol, Zed, I think people should not at you about FF7.
I agree.
Do not at Zed. At Zed about a million other things on Twitter. Not about FF7.
Nothing about
Final Fantasy VII. Yeah, you know the things. Don't add about FF7. If you want to talk about themes or things that they've clearly experienced so far, like if you want to know, like, what did you think about the Scorpion Sentinel boss fight? You know, like, what about that weird turtle lizard monster thing underneath Don Corneo's bedroom? Ugh. Yeah, these are things we're about to talk about. Like, feel free to hit Zed up for that stuff, but be cool. If you've played the game, or even if you know anything about the game, you know some of the stuff I'm talking about. Be cool. Lock it down. But you could talk to me. You can go to the Post Show Recaps Patreon Discord. If you're not a member already, patreon.com/postshowrecaps. Go to the games channel. Spoiler text, please. You can highlight your text and hide it in invisible ink, and I can push the button and I can see what you've said. And we can have a very nice, big, spoilerific chat. Or there is the Final Fantasy VII Discord that I am a part of that we built around the time of the FF7 remake. Zed, are you upset to hear that there's a Shadow Discord? Yeah. There's a secret Discord. It is totally free. Oh, it is 100% free. You do not have to sign up for absolutely anything. It is not as trafficked as the patron Discord, but we're still in there and we still talk from time to time, and I'm happy to talk FF7 or any RPG or any game that you want in that Discord. And if you want the link to that, hit me up on Twitter at RoundHoward. I'll reply to you with the link, and I think it's got like a 24-hour expiration window, so sign up fast. Those are the ways if you want to get into spoiler stuff. But here, this is a spoiler-free zone. Zed, with all of that said, we're going to get into it. We're going to journey through Midgar, as the title of this episode describes. And I would love to start with this from you. What is Midgar? And as you're experiencing it so far, what is Final Fantasy VII?
So Midgar seems to me, and I know some of these references come after Final Fantasy VII, but I'm playing this game in the year 2021, so here we are. Midgar feels to me sort of like a Ready Player One, Hunger Games, like 13 Districts sort of post-apocalyptic world, where, as in most post-apocalyptic worlds, and also the one that we live in, there are different classes of people.
Pre-apocalyptic, like pseudo-apocalyptic
impending
world
apocalyptic
that we live in. Yeah, yeah. Pandemic
societies.
Apocalyptic, right.
So most of what we've seen, or what I've seen of Midgar, is the slums of these different sectors. And I'm not sure what determines the sectors themselves. I know there are plates and there are pillars, and I know there's a very tall Shinra tower that I climbed all of the stairs of.
Yes.
What else do I know? So Final Fantasy VII, we have this team of rebels, essentially, of the organization Avalanche.
Yes.
Including our main character, Cloud, who is an ex-soldier, and soldier is also an organization. It doesn't literally mean
it's like
soldier.
All caps soldier.
Yes.
Big S, big O, big L, big D, big I, big E, BR soldier.
Big soldier energy.
Big soldier. Yeah. And they're the military wing,
yes,
of the Shinra company, the Shinra Electric Company. And they run Midgar. They run the world, basically. They run Midgar by having access to what is pronounced officially in FF7 Remake as Mako, though I have said Mako for my entire life.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have a hard time not saying Mako here. And they harvest this energy that the members of this group, Avalanche, believe is like literally the lifeblood of the planet. And they want to stop Shinra from being mega douches and holding all of the money and all of the power and oppressing so many people, and being situated in this megalopolis, there's that word again, called Midgar, which, to your point, is split into many different communities, 8 sectors, 8 neighborhoods that are separated by like big walls in between each one. And you don't explore a bunch of them, at least in the original game, but you do explore a couple, and the slums that you're living in are underneath an enormous plate. That big effing pizza in the sky, as Barrett, who is the leader of Avalanche, describes, where the pie in the sky, the upper crust of society lives, Zed.
Yes. It also reminds me of Snowpiercer.
Mm-hmm.
If a train were a circle instead of a train, in terms of the definitive separation of you know, the lower class, the people living in the slums from those people living higher up. And throughout the game, or at least throughout the part that I've played, you're like working to make your way to the surface, is my understanding. And I know there's a part where you have to climb. You're like climbing up to put the batteries in the thing.
Yeah, climb that golden, that shiny wire of hope.
Yeah, climbing wires. That's a thing you can do in this game.
Mm-hmm. But only when prompted.
Right.
It's not something you can just do all the time. No. You have to be prompted.
It's not quite that open world.
No, no, but it does happen. So those are the basics. And thematically, what are you gathering from FF7 so far?
So I keep wondering if there is a government or if there is just this power company that because they have
both the
literal
company
and metaphorical power.
Yeah.
They are the ones in control. So
they are.
It is very much a game about who controls the means of production, which is a very important thing to understand if you are playing this game through a socialist lens, which, surprise, I am. What else?
Yeah, I mean, that's accurate.
That's the key thrust.
Shinra's in charge. Shinra got that money, and Shinra's in charge. And basically everywhere that you go, at the very least, Shinra's fingerprints are all over everything. And so the game begins with that epic music we played at the start here, as we embark on the first mission with Avalanche, which is the name of... They've been branded by Shinra as eco-terrorists. These dastardly avalanchers, these terrorists who are going around causing all sorts of mayhem. But you're inclined to question that, right? I mean, you're in the perspective of these characters.
Right.
And you see all of the horrible, shitty things that Shinra does. So maybe Shinra's got this one wrong, Zed.
I mean, maybe they also know
that they've got it wrong.
Yeah. Well, to the point that they make a speech, the President Shinra... makes a speech about how they're going to destroy a sector of the city so that they can then build it back up and be the heroes. And then it's later revealed that they're not going to bother building it back up again because it would be too expensive.
Right. Because they're awful, 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 awful. May I stress and underline 500 more times awful people at the top of Shinra here in this game. But you begin with Cloud Strife. His name's Cloud Strife. He's got this huge spiky blonde hair. He's got these eyes that everyone's like, oh, look at your eyes. They're infused with Mako. You must be a soldier. You could tell him by the eyes, Zed.
Right.
But if you were a member of Soldier, which was the elite soldier class for Shinra, not only is Shinra a power company, Zed, and not only is Shinra effectively like global government, but they also have an army, a literal army, and it's Soldier. And Cloud is ex-soldier, and he's now a current mercenary, and he is on... he's on the payroll with Avalanche. It's just a job, though. He doesn't give a hoot about any of the stuff that they're interested in, Zed. He just wants that money or that gil.
Right.
That sweet, sweet gil is what they call money in the world of Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah. Cloud is not motivated by the ethics or morality of the situation. Cloud is there to go in, get a paycheck, and get out.
Yeah.
And sometimes getting the paycheck seems to be the challenging aspect.
Yeah, because Avalanche is not like deeply funded. Sometimes we're like, hey, could you work for like just like a drink at Tifa's bar or something? and sometimes that's what they and like Cloud's like, no, I want the money. And so it leads to friction between Cloud, who is as an ex-soldier, his title implies means that he's a very good fighter. Would you like to describe Cloud's preliminary weapon?
A large sword?
Yes. That is like the size of like three people.
Yeah.
It's called the Buster Sword. And it is gigantic. It looks like the wing of a small airplane.
Yes. Yes. I mean, that's, from my experience, pretty typical. That's iconic Final Fantasy, right? Is that your main character has some giant sword.
Usually they have some sort of signature weapon. This is, I think, the most iconic main character weapon in a Final Fantasy series is the Buster Sword. Mm-hmm. It's just like this huge-ass sword. In Final Fantasy VIII, if we're enjoying this enough and we ever get there, your main character has what is called a gun blade, which is like a revolver with a sword on it.
Oh, no.
It's weird. That's kind of iconic, too, but like it's also strange and weird and... when you really like poke at it, it doesn't really make sense.
Yeah.
It's like that. It's like some designer was like, oh, that would be cool.
You get a close weapon or a ranged weapon. I don't know if you get it both in one thing.
And it doesn't work as a ranged weapon too. It's just a close up weapon.
Oh, well that's even like, more dumb.
You go and you slash someone with the gun blade and you pull a trigger and like there's a little bit of like an explosive slash and that's it.
I see.
Yeah, so the gunblade really doesn't make
sense. It's not like Barrett's like gun arm situation.
Right. So Cloud with his... I love that like we're defending like the veracity of the Buster Sword versus the gunblade because the Buster Sword is comically large and completely impractical. But it's also stacked against Cloud's first like working partner is the leader of Avalanche, Barrett Wallace, who I believe that the designers of FF7 like literally modeled after Mr. T, is who they were aiming for.
I could see that. I could very much see
like,
that.
I think they were actively aiming for Mr. T. He is like very vulgar. He's like constantly like his dialogue is bleeped out.
It's He's like got if you a hit the shift and the numbers keys. That's a lot of
yes.
how he talks.
It's just like someone like furiously pounding the text. Has a Gatling gun for a hand. Luke Skywalker, eat your heart out. This is the coolest hand substitute for a weapon in fiction. Maybe not, but what do you think of Barrett
so good.
Far?
It's pretty good. I am highly amused in games only by large men yelling and jumping up and down and throwing temper tantrums a lot.
Barrett does this often.
It is the majority of his characterization thus far. When I played Final Fantasy IX, I was playing just with the regular character names, but my one roommate was also playing through and naming all the characters after people we knew. And so I was Steiner because Steiner is the knight.
Yep.
And jumps up and down and throws a lot of fits.
Yes.
And I don't know that that's my personality, but I do enjoy those characters who are just like mad all the time.
Yeah. It's a leap to FF9. I would definitely put you more in the, I would literally call you Zedane is, it's right there.
Well, now we know this, yeah. We know for sure.
Yeah.
But this was many years ago.
It's right there. It's time. Right there for the eventual FF9 version of this. When we go yeah. back through that. But Barrett is the leader of Avalanche. He believes in the cause. He hates the Shinra Company with a fiery passion. He is the leader of these missions to blow up the Mako reactors. Every sector in Midgar has a Mako reactor through which all of the power is supplied. And he thinks that Shinra is destroying the planet by mining all of the Mako. So he wants to destroy the reactors. So the first mission of the game is Cloud and Barrett going through this reactor alongside the other members of Avalanche, Jesse, Biggs, and Wedge. Biggs and Wedge are names of characters from Star Wars, and they are also names of characters featured in just about every single Final Fantasy. There's a Biggs and Wedge up and down just about every single FF game that exists. There's a few characters that have that distinction. Just like sort of like through lines throughout, like even if they're like different characters, that they'll just like take the names. So like Biggs and Wedge are hallmarks of a Final Fantasy game.
Interesting. Yeah. Good to know.
And like Jesse is super resourceful, and Biggs is like kind of like this like little like grunt of a soldier, and Wedge is like me. He's just like kind of like a chubby guy. He's like, oh, Cloud, oh, man, it's so cool to hang out with you. And Cloud's like, whatever, man. I'm like, oh, I'm not undeterred by that. I'll still keep hanging out. I want to be your friend. So that's Wedge. Wedge is, if I'm anyone in FF7, I'm Wedge, for sure. He's great. The remake does a very good job with him, specifically. The actor who plays Badger from Breaking Bad does the voice for Wedge in the remake, and it's very, very good. So they go through this first reactor. They have to fight the Scorpion Sentinel, Zed, This is the first boss fight that you encounter in the game. Was this difficult for you? It's like a giant scorpion robot with a huge tail that you have to hit with lightning and stuff.
That was probably the battle where I got the game over screen twice.
Yeah.
Which is also a new experience for me, because I think even by Final Fantasy IX, if you die in a battle, you just respawn at your save point. You don't get the, like, game over, starting credits, start rolling, as if you just turned the game on situation.
Yeah.
That you get. I was shocked the first time. I was 1997, like, wait, I didn't even see it.
You're traveling through time, you know? It was a different time. You know, we're not at, like, we're not like Nintendo level difficulty, but it's still not easy.
I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
That was so funny to me. I was like, wait, not only did I die, but I have to, like, start over. Like, restart the game, start over.
Yeah. So you blow up the reactor after you fight this gigantic, literally it's called the Scorpion Sentinel. Shinra has left there. The remake makes a huge meal out of this. They turn the Scorpion Sentinel into a sprawling boss fight where it's like climbing all over the reactor. It's like this huge action scene. Like,
oh, wow.
So I want to highlight that for you along the way, Zed, of like, what have they done? What little things did they do that they expanded upon in mm-hmm. major fashion? Scorpion Sentinel is one of them. You blow up the reactor and it's all over the news, right? Everyone's like, oh, Avalanche struck again. Those filthy terrorists, it's all over the news. Shinra runs the media, Zed, and they're controlling the narrative.
Yep, this is what happens when corporations are in charge of everything. They control the narrative, they control the power, which means they control the people, they control the money.
And everyone believes it, right? Like, you see, we're skipping past an important point to get back to, but in a minute, like, on the way back from the mission, they take a train, because it's like, you know, fantasy New York City, and so you have to commute from your activism mission, yeah, to go back home to your apartment.
Oh boy, that's real.
Yeah, and yeah, is that familiar at all? Not even a little bit.
No, not a few times a week all summer.
Yeah, and like literally on the train, like Barrett like gets into a fight, like an argument with this like one guy who's like middle management Shinra, being like, "Well, I think Shinra's actually pretty good, and these Avalanche guys suck." And Barrett's like, "Are you kidding me?" He freaks out at him.
He's
like
so
shakes
mad.
His huge like Gatling gun fist at the guy, and the guy's like, "Ah, let me out of here!" And everyone has to be like, "Barrett, come on, chill out, man. Like this is aggressive. This is a lot." So like everybody in Midgar for the most part feels like there aren't a lot of people that are sympathizing with what Avalanche is putting down. That Avalanche seems to be on the outside with this thing, and Shinra's got such a stranglehold on everybody that they just want their lives to be comfortable, cozy. They want to keep doing all of the stuff that Shinra enables them to do. They've got TV, they've got lights on, you know, this is all good. Even though everybody in the slums specifically, they're living in relative squalor. And yet, you know, this is what they know. Some people in the slums are more sympathetic to the Avalanche cause than others. We'll get to them momentarily. One of the first people who we meet as far as somebody who lives on the ground floor of Midgar is this young woman who's selling flowers that Cloud encounters at the end of his mission to blow up the first reactor. And he's on his way to the train. He bumps into this young woman with flowers. And you get to make a choice here, Zed. So the game allows you to make some choices along the way. You don't have to do it one way. You have a couple of different ways to do it. And one is like you could be like nice to this woman and accept a flower from them. Or you can be kind of rude and be like, no, I gotta make my train like a real New Yorker. What did you choose, Zed?
Well, the flower was cheap, so I bought the flower.
Was that the only reason? Like, did you want to make her feel okay? Did you feel guilty?
It was a little bit of both. Yeah. I mean, it didn't. As long as it didn't feel like this was a person trying to extort me for money, mm-hmm. which does feel like it happens on other occasions.
Yes.
It's like, well, you can try this thing that I have. It only costs 250 gil. And I'm like, I don't know that that's going to be worth it. And I only have like 1,000. So we're not going to do that. But she seemed nice. Yeah. So I bought a flower.
All right. So you bought the flower. You're on your way to the train station. And then all these Shinra troopers are like, hey, that guy with the gigantic sword on his back probably blew up the reactor. And they're not wrong. They're not wrong. And this is a huge mission. This is like the second level of the remake. is like escaping and fighting all of these people. But the original game gives you the option to just be like, I don't want to fight anyone. I just want to run away and hop on a train. what did you do? Did you fight them or did you run away?
I think I fought them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds right.
I was like, we might as well. I'm mad at you. You guys suck.
What do you think I did?
I did what I had to do. You ran away.
I ran away. Yeah. I had a panic attack as a, however, you know, like a 12-year-old or whatever.
Yeah.
I was like, no. I don't want to fight these guys.
It was the like, fight these guys or maybe later.
Yeah.
I was like, what? The game, no, not later.
If the game is giving me the option to, yeah, I think it literally is like, fight them or like, not now. I think I'll always pick not now. So I didn't fight them. Either way, you end up on the train and like everyone in from Avalanche, Barrett and Jesse and Biggs and Witch are like, oh, do you think Shinra got him? Oh, that sucks. I'm going to miss him. And Jesse seems to kind of like have a thing for Cloud. She's like, oh, no. I don't want to lose Cloud yet. And Barrett's like, whatever. He doesn't even, he's way too expensive a hire anyway. And then Cloud like gets on the train. He's like, thanks, Dick. I heard everything you said.
And there's a lot of timed sequences early on in this game too, which was very stressful for
me. Yes. Because there's a timed train sequence that's coming up here pretty soon. You take the train, you go all the way back to Sector 7. Blissful Sector 7. Not a terrible thing in sight for this community. Everything's going to be just great for everyone who you're about to meet here in Sector 7, including this wonderful sprawling Bar Zed called Seventh Heaven. No relation to the Warner Brothers television show, as far
featuring
as I know.
Yeah. Jessica Biel, yeah. who was also in a movie
of the hit film Next, starring Nicolas Cage, which if you don't know why that has become a big deal in the Post-Show Recaps patron community, let me just say it has become one, and this is a strong incentive for you potentially to sign up for the Post-Show Recaps Patreon, as our community's growing relationship with Nicolas Cage. It is evolving swiftly and dangerously, might I add. So you go to this bar, and this bar ends up being, this is the headquarters for Avalanche, right? This is the secret base for Avalanche, and you meet a couple of new people. One is Marlene, who's this young kid, who's Barrett's daughter. And so like
helps run the bar, by the way, even though it looks like she's about 5 years old.
She's tiny. And like, you haven't seen Marlene in cutscenes yet, I don't think, but you will at one point. And like, she is like easily like 3 feet tall, you know, like,
yeah, she's so small.
Yeah. She's like just a couple of shades past like a full on, infant, you know, she's like probably in like, I know it's the terrible twos. What are the threes called? I think she's probably like 4 or 5. She's a kindergartner, you know.
Yeah.
She's young and she's running a bar. But like she brings
the
out
the world we live in.
She brings out the softer side in Barrett, right? Like Barrett's like, my generation screwed everything up, and I am not going to leave this destroyed planet for my kid. And it's like, preach, dude. Yes, get it.
Yeah,
save the world, man. So like everything he's doing for her. It's pretty clear that is a big reason for it. And then there's Tifa. Tifa Lockhart is her name. And she is like a martial arts badass, Cloud's best friend from childhood. You get to see some flashbacks where the two of them were in their hometown, Nibelheim. Is it what it's called? Nibelheim? You got a problem with that?
No, it's just very funny.
Say it 4 times fast. And you get a flashback to this like one night when Cloud, who also at that moment looks like he's about 3 feet tall when they're kids. Yeah. Like she seems a lot taller than he was. He seems pretty scrawny, like this like tiny little thing. He's like, I'm going into Midgar. I'm going to join Soldier. And he's like, really? You are? He's like, yeah, what's the big deal? I'm a little guy, but I'll grow up. I'll get big. I'll get strong.
There's like 3 sizes of people in these games. And it's like you are child size and you come up to people's waists.
Yes.
Or you are like regular adult height.
Yes.
Or you are like giant Barrett size human. And those are the only options.
I think that like if you were to scale it, Zed, in like the polygonal era of RPGs, I think you're 3 feet tall. Or you're like 5'6", or you're like 7 feet.
Yeah, there's no in-betweens.
Not really, no.
That's it. That's all there is.
Yeah, like there's 3 heights. 3 feet, 5'6", 7 feet. The numbers are good. Different lost numbers. So Tifa is Cloud's friend. She's basically the reason why he has this job as a mercenary in Midgar working for Avalanche. She effectively runs the bar. She's the one who hands out the diner martinis. She likes Cloud quite a bit. They have some history. And if Cloud is ever sort of like a little bit softer, sometimes it's around Tifa. But even then, he can kind of be a bit of a dick to Tifa.
Yeah, there's sort of an ongoing will they, won't they between Cloud and Tifa, and also between Cloud and
the Flower Girl.
The Flower Girl, yeah. who will eventually reappear.
Yeah. So there's a big fight. Cloud's like, "Hey, where's my money?" And Bear's like, could you wait?
I don't got it.
I don't have it. And there's like a little bit of a fight, and Cloud's like, "I'm leaving." And then Tifa's like, "But hey, remember you once told me that like we'd be friends forever, and if I ever needed you, I could depend on you." And Cloud's like, "Ah, shit, I think I did say that." And so like they're able to like kind of guilt, and then like Barrett's like, "Hey, could you do one more job with us?" And Cloud's like, "Fine, sure." So Cloud joins up with Barrett again, and this time Tifa's going to come along for the mission as well. They're going to blow up another reactor. They're all over the news. Avalanche is cooking with gas, Zed. And so they figure, literally, all right, now's the time. You know, we're heating up. Let's go blow up another reactor. We've got some momentum right now. We're making Shinra mad. This is good. We're doing the thing. And so they're going to go off on another mission. And
they've got a kid who can run the bar while they're gone.
Marlene's got this. Marlene's going to hold this shit down. She's got it. She knows how to make the diner martini. She's good. Somewhere along the way, I mean, I feel like it's probably worth mentioning some gameplay stuff, because I actually do think that like there's some degree of story ramification to it, that Mako can be distilled down into these little orbs called materia. And materia are like these magic rocks that enable you, if you equip them to your swords or like your wristbands or whatever, you can do
your weapons and your armor. Yeah. are the slots in the
I like to think about it practically, though. It's like, where did you put that? Like, did you like put it just like on your hand? Like, how did you do it? And so you get like lightning materia and fire materia, and sometimes it's not even magic stuff, Zed. Like sometimes it's like, here's the steel materia.
Right.
You equip this yellow rock, it'll enable you to steal shit from people.
Or cover, or learn enemy skills thanks to this rock.
Do you have a favorite materia yet?
Well, I like steel because when I was running around the train graveyard forever and battling all the time, being able to steal like potions and ethers and things
helpful
was very helpful, since they weren't going to keep reappearing and I was not in a place where I could buy more at the time. But there's also all, which I finally figured out how all works, in that you have to pair it specifically in a slot with another guy, and then that will be done to all of the enemies or all of the members of your party if it's like restorative magic.
Yeah, you put like cure in one materia slot, and if the materia slot connects to another materia slot, you put all there so you can heal everybody at once. Yeah, it's clutch. The all materia is good. You want that. So you're going on this mission, and then this is what you were talking about before. It's like sometimes there's like a timed element to this stuff. So like earlier, like in that first reactor, once you set the bomb,
you have to get out of there in time.
You got 20 minutes or you're dead, and they'll hold you to it.
Yeah.
There's like literally like, there's like a purple 20-minute countdown clock, and it's ticking, and it's ticking through battles. It's ticking in the menu screen. It's ticking everywhere.
Right. You do anything, it's still
going.
You're trying to do potions to get your health back up. You're trying to like fix your weapons and your accessories and stuff. It's still going.
It's going. So you gotta run.
I think if you save the game and quit, it would still go off.
You're in danger, Cloud.
You have
run.
To start over.
Yeah, go. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's a few things like that, and one of them happens here where Jesse, member of Avalanche, has like put on her like tattoo shop owner in the East Village in the early 2000s hat and made a fake ID. I may have just revealed how I got my fake ID when I was living in the New York City suburbs.
Oddly specific.
Yeah. I don't know what that's talking. Yeah. I remember the name. I'm not going to say it out loud just in case, because I got to show some loyalty to them. Thank you for hooking it up. But Jesse creates these like fake IDs for everybody. And when you're on these trains that travel all throughout Midgar that take you from sector to sector, they have like these security passes. They scan your IDs. And so like to get to like deeper, higher privileged access points, like this is the way that they're like blocking off quote unquote lower class, right? Like you scum can't come up to the upper crust. And so like they have literal sensors. So they have these like fake IDs that are going to get them in deeper. But something went down. The fake IDs don't work. The train goes haywire, Zed, and you then have to, like, run through the train and avoid enemy detection, and, like, you have, like, 10 seconds per train car.
Yeah.
And, like, people are getting in your 15, way.
But it's, like, it's too short. Yes. You just have to keep running, and I'm periodically checking a walkthrough just to make sure I'm, like, not missing important stuff.
Yeah.
And in the walkthrough, I think it was, like, before you go through, if you go over to this guy, you'll get this thing and you'll get a potion over here and an ether over here, and it's like, no, I'm just running. I gotta go. I'll get that stuff later somewhere else. Yeah. But right now, navigating is hard enough. I just gotta get out.
Yeah. I think this is the most at least one of the most New York City things in Final Fantasy VII is you run through this train, you have a very tight window, and then there's like people in your way. And, like, they won't really get out. Like, you have to, like, kind of, like, push them out of your way.
Yeah.
Like, by, like, just, like, running into them. And eventually they're just like, ah! All right. And then they move. So I always thought that that was hilarious. But I used to get so stressed out playing that part. You have to jump off the train. The plan to blow up this next reactor is already starting poorly. You've been busted. You had to jump off the train. Now you gotta walk. Right? You gotta, like, walk through the train tracks to get to where you're going. And so like there's this whole like big like sort of like underground area that you have to walk through, and there's just all these enemies that you got to fight. So equip your all, your fire all, your lightning all, whatever it is. You've got the Buster Sword, you've got Barret's Gatling Gun, and then just to reemphasize, like Tifa's weapon is just her fist. She just beats the shit out of everybody. Yeah. She's like, yeah, I know martial arts, I'm cool. It's an optional story that you do not mandatorily have to discover, Zed. But if you choose to pursue it at some point, you may learn about my boy Zangin, who is her martial arts instructor. Great. Who is like this orange dude with white hair that sort of looks like orange Ron Perlman.
Oh my god!
And he has a cape, I think. And he taught her martial arts. But you don't have. That's not mandatory for the story. That's just like extra detail if you choose to pursue it. I think there is a point in the story where you absolutely have to see Zangin, but you don't have to pursue the Zangin story.
Okay.
So just be on the lookout. Didn't have that on my bingo card that I would say Zangin 5 times on this opening podcast. But you're like brawling your way through. In the remake, Zed, this is like a really huge series of levels is to get to this next part where you go to this next reactor pretty quick. In the game, like, it's not that complicated of a dungeon.
Yeah.
Remake really makes a meal out of it. It's, like, probably, like, an hour and a half long experience. Maybe two. And you get to this next reactor. Speaking of timed stuff, there's this, like, one part where, like, you have to open a door. And Tifa's like, oh, I think the only way we can open the door is if we all just hit this button at the same time.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And so, literally, the game is like, all right, you now need to intuit that what needs to happen is you have to press X on your controller, whatever button on your controller, at the exact right time so that you are slamming your fists down on, like, this gigantic button
and
at the same
the
time as your allies.
And that's all the walkthrough says, too, is, like, do it at the same time as them. And I'm like, no, I understand that's
There's
what
no
I need
trick,
to do.
Zed. Like, there's no trick. This one takes, like, 8 hours to figure out.
Yeah, infuriating.
You have to, like, hook into the rhythm. There are so many ways in which the game is deeply dated. This is one of them. It's just so hard and so unnecessarily difficult.
We must all bang on the table at the same exact
simultaneously.
Time.
Simultaneously bang this button. So you mash that button, you go through, you get to the reactor. The reactor's laid out exactly the same. I neglected to include the fact that in order to get into the reactor this time, you, like, slide down a literal slide, and it's kind of cool. That's fun. That's really fun to do in the remake. They definitely included that. They're like, here's the slide. And you're like, oh, okay. So you slide down a slide, and you put the bomb on the thing, and it's all hunky-dory, right? There's no scorpion sentinel this time. There's no robot there. Cloud has like a little bit of a flashback, right? He has like sort of like this like PTSD type trigger, and you don't really know what it is, but he sees Tifa. She's got like a cowboy hat in like a flashback to another reactor or like another reactor-ish looking place. Did you catch this? Do you remember this?
I vaguely.
All right, I'm glad I'm reminding you because he has this flashback to Tifa in like a cowboy hat.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like a man who appears to be deceased nearby. And also like this giant sword that's nearby. And she starts getting very upset and swears vengeance and talks about this guy named Sephiroth.
Yes.
Who's that? We'll find out. Stay tuned for like just a little bit longer. We're going to get there. And so Cloud is having, and everyone's like, Cloud, you all right? Stop freaking out. I mean, we've got a job to do. You can't just like black out in the middle of the thing. And so he blacked out in the middle of the thing and they go out. They're like, oh, no boss battle. Okay, cool. You know, at this point, Zed, are you thinking like, I smell shenanigans.
Something's going down.
Something's afoot. And so you work your way up through the reactor. Like, all right, la-di-da, this thing's going to blow up in 20 minutes, but I don't have a timer even this time. I'm going to remote detonate.
Like, that can't be good.
This is pretty easy. Cakewalk. And then you get to the top of the reactor, and there he is. President Shinra. This fat idiot who's probably like in the size range. I would say he hits the 5'6" threshold. He's like a stocky 5'6".
Yeah, he's round. Around 5'6".
Yeah, round, like round Howard, rounder and eviler. And he's like, he's got like his like little like mustache that you can basically tell is there, even though it's all polygonal. It's like it's a suggested mustache.
An implied mustache.
And he's got like his little red suit. And he's like, oh, sweet. So you guys are gonna, I heard you guys are gonna blow up this reactor. That's fine. We're gonna like broadcast that it was you guys, and like you're gonna lose a ton of sympathy points, and we're gonna squash the rebellion because we're gonna make you all look like the turds who did this. How do you feel about that? And this is like when President Shinra is like starting to flex for the first time. What were your impressions of this man as you met him, Zed?
I mean, it's like, of course the corporation wants to blame the revolutionaries for the problems of society. It's like, well, yeah, look at this thing that it's property destruction. We want to complain about destroying property because that will detract from
the issue,
the actual issue. Right.
Yeah.
Why are people angry? Why are they destroying property? No, that's not what we want to talk about. We want to talk about the fact that you smashed in the windows of a Target.
Yeah. Yeah. And so they've smashed in the windows of the Mako reactor.
Yeah.
But like President Shinra's like, oh no, keep doing that. And also like, we're going to let this one blow up too. And we're going to widely blame you. And everyone's going to hate Avalanche. And you guys are going to suck. And we're going to keep being awesome.
Right.
And so then he's like, and to add insult to injury, let me throw another robot thing at you. So you have to fight the Airbuster.
Yeah.
It's a very difficult battle in the remake. How did you handle the Airbuster? It's like this giant floating robot guy. And like you're split across the screen. Where Cloud's on one side and Tifa and Barrett are on the other.
That one was okay, actually. And I played through it, and then I went and looked at the walkthrough, and it was like giving you all this strategy. And I was like, I don't know. I hit the right buttons. I picked the right things.
Yeah.
It went okay.
If it's a robot, lightning's good. Yeah. Robots don't like electric stuff. Yeah. And also, if your limit breaks activate, and if you don't know what a limit break is, it's like you take enough punishment after a point in time that your limit break gauge fills up. And when it's full to bursting, you can execute like a rad move.
Yeah.
Like Cloud has this move where he just like jumps in the air and he hits you with his sword. It's called Braver, or he can like slash you twice. It's cross slash.
Yeah, cross slash where he like carves Japanese characters in the air. And it's very dangerous.
It's great. It's great. I'm trying to remember what Barrett's are. I know he has one where like he can shoot somebody's magic off of them. Mind blown, I think.
Oh yeah, I think I just got that one.
And then Tifa has like slots, right? Like she has
like a
slot machine that like if you get like hit in a row, she does something cool. But if you get yeah in a row, she does something really cool. And then if you get like miss,
then nothing happens.
Not really anything happens. So the mechanic there is a little sloppy.
But it is cool that as she gets more things, you can do them all. You don't have to pick one.
Yes.
If you successfully, as usual, hit the button at the right time, she will beat rush and then she will somersault.
Yeah. Has she dolphin kicked for you yet or not yet?
Not yet.
Yeah, she's going to dolphin kick someday, and that's great. Tifa's the best. I love Tifa. She's great. She's super fun to play as in the remake because it's sort of like action RPG. So it's faster and like you're moving around and stuff. And she's the way that they mapped her out is really fun. So you destroy this robot. President Shinra's gone. He's going to let everything blow up. Things start blowing up. And then because Cloud was on the other side of this robot that blows up on top of this like very dangerously high bridge, I might add. Like you're like... Really at the, like, you're basically at the plate. Again, it bears repeating that Midgar is this gigantic city that has, like, a huge plate that is separating the upper class from the lower class. Literally on the ground, they don't see the sun. All they see is this giant metal roof over their heads.
And electric lights.
And electric lights. And that's it. So there's, like, this big explosion. And you're, like, right there up in the plate. And Cloud's like, oh, shit. And Cloud basically is about to fall. And Tifa's like, we can't let him fall. And then Cloud's like, nah, let me fall. I'll be all right. It's like, Cloud, the confidence. Can you imagine? Because he's like pretty confident. He's like, I'll be good.
Like, Barrett, yeah, make sure. No, you're not going to be good.
It's like, dude, that is like a 300-foot fall at least. Death is imminent.
Yeah.
That's not good.
Should not be survivable.
Yeah. You shouldn't be able to make it through. But Cloud's like, get out of here. And Barrett's like, you know, maybe you're not so bad after all. And then Cloud says something terse, I feel like. And Barrett's like, maybe you are a dick. That's sort of their relationship. And so he and Tifa leave and Cloud falls and, things black out and then quickly like things like fade to white. And like, there seems like there's some sort of like narration, right? Like there's some sort of like conversation that happens where it's like, hey, can you get up? And Cloud's like, yeah, who are you? And he's like, don't worry about that.
Yeah.
It's like, what's going on here? There's like
no
some
idea.
Sort of, is this inside voice? Is this somebody else? Is there a ghost? Do you have, there seems to be somebody is speaking to Cloud, Zed.
Right.
Do we have any theories?
I mean, now that we're talking about it, the only thought, and we haven't talked about this yet, but my thought, based on what you just said, is like, is it possible that Cloud is also an ancient like Eris?
Yes.
Since Eris has these voices, the voice of her mother mainly, I believe, who speaks to her.
Yeah.
And her mother was an ancient.
All right. So
we don't know a ton about what ancients are, other than that they don't exist anymore.
You
okay,
don't,
fine.
Yeah,
I don't.
But,
excuse
but
me.
I am
the voice of the people, Josh.
Oh, I love it. This is great. Are you having fun? Is this good?
Oh, no.
Is this good? Is this helping you with the story at all?
Yes, it's good. It's definitely good.
Okay, cool. So we don't know. We don't know what's happening, but Cloud's having some sort of conversation, and then he wakes up, and there she is, the flower girl from before, the one he got the flower from. So she's like, hey, I remember you. And Cloud wakes up, and now he's in the middle of a flower bed in the middle of a church that he dropped from hundreds of feet in the sky through a roof of a church and landed in a flower bed. And so now he's fine.
Yeah.
And just to spoil it for you, Zed, it's like there wasn't any like additional chicanery that occurred. He just survived that fall.
Yeah.
It's a video game.
Yep.
He's alive. He's fine.
He was in Soldier. He's so strong.
You know, Soldier first class. That's what they do. So this woman identifies herself, as you mentioned. Her name is Eris Gainsborough. But I have to tell you that her actual name, based on the original translation and the remake updated as well, is Aerith, with a TH instead of the S.
Oh.
But for me, she has always been Eris.
Yeah.
And for the sake of this podcast, because you are playing the PlayStation era version of Final Fantasy VII, and because I so vastly prefer the name, we too shall say Eris. But I just, for the record, just need to say her name officially is Aerith. You all right?
Yeah, it just sounds, I mean, it sounds like a lisp, which is...
It doesn't sound right. It's Eris.
Yeah. A-E-R-I-S. That's what my screen says.
Eris. So I'll stick with what your screen says. Then that'll be the excuse. I don't want to confuse you, Zed.
Great.
And so if you play the remake and she's like, oh, they keep talking about Aerith, but I'm seeing Aerith. Well, this is why. It's a better name. It's just a
transliteration better. Is hard. I get it.
So she's like, hey, you want to like hang out with me? Just, you know, making some flowers. I'm a fun person. I got a cool red coat. Yeah, sweet hair, you know, cool video game hair. She's got like the two bangs and like the long braid, mm-hmm. and she looks cool. And then, speaking of looking cool, oh, who's this? Stranger walks into the church, Zed. Some guy in like a suit, a black sports coat, a white button down, and shock red hair. And he's got like this like stick, and his name is Reno.
Reno.
Yeah, he's Reno, and he is a member of the Turks. And so, Zed, not only is Shinra the power company, literally, right? Like, they are the power company in terms of energy. They are the power company in terms of global influence. They are the power company in terms of having a military wing in the form of S.H.I.E.L.D. They're also the power company. They're in the form of Soldier, yeah. Mixing my universes. They are the power company, Zed, in the form of having like a mob. They've got like their own
rival gang on top of having a military. They've got also like, this like street organization.
They've got like it like the, so they're called the Turks, and the Turks are like these like too cool for school like secret agents who wear suits. They dress sharp for the job, and they like do like the street level stuff, and they're like somewhere in the mix between like mobsters and like detectives, I feel like. Right? And I know that line can be blurry anyway.
Uh-huh.
So that's like kind of what the Turks are.
Yeah.
And so this one Turk, Reno, shows up. He's like, hey, I'm here for the flower girl. And the flower girl, Aerith, is like, hey, Cloud, so you're a mercenary, huh? Can I hire you to be my bodyguard? And so it's a big Kevin Costner, Whitney Houston moment where she doesn't sing, but Cloud fights Reno, and then he's like, all right, let's get out of here. And you have to, like, run through the church, and Aerith is, like, under attack from all of these Shinra guards.
Yeah.
You like the Shinra guard design, Zed? They wear these, like, blue helmets and blue suits.
Fine.
Yeah. Yeah, notable. Put a pin in it. We'll revisit it at some point in time. And so, like, Aerith is, like, under duress, and Cloud's like, all right, I know how to help you. I'm going to push barrels onto these people.
I was so confused.
The listeners may be as well, because they're like, wait, excuse me? And much like in the incredible action movie Next, starring Nicolas Cage, in which a bunch of logs are unleashed and Nicolas Cage has to dodge them, Cloud runs around like the attic of the church, pushing gigantic log-like barrels onto the ground to drop on the Shinra troopers while Aerith dodges them and gets to safety.
But you got to do the right one at the right time, because if you go to the wrong one, Cloud will just say something like, I wish I could push these barrels.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, maybe I should push that. It's like, all right, well then do it. Wow.
I mean, I guess I'm glad.
Except my action button.
I'm glad that it doesn't let you push the wrong ones and then you're just screwed, because that would be deeply upsetting.
It would be tough. So that goes down, and Aerith escapes with you, and you get, and she's like, all right, well, let me take you back to my house. I live nearby. And you go and, like, you know, you're visiting all the places, and like if you're stopping by into like certain neighborhoods, and the neighborhood that you go to and like certain buildings, there's like one guy who's like on a blanket and he lives in like a pipe, and like there's all sorts of stuff. There's a huge TV in the middle, and then you go to Aerith's house, and Aerith has a mansion. Right? Yeah. Like, Aerith.
Two floors, there's two bedrooms.
Yeah. Aerith lives in, like, a five-bedroom brownstone in the middle of Midgar. Like, the only one.
Yeah. It has a garden and a backyard.
She has, like, a sprawling garden. There seems to be, like, a waterfall. It's like, how? How did this happen? How did you get this? Zed, I don't believe that there is ever any real explanation for this. So you just kind of have to accept it as canon that Aerith and her mother...
Just generational wealth.
Generational gill. That's where it comes from. So they have like the one like plum spot in all of Midgar. So you go home. Eris introduces Cloud to her mom. She's like, "Oh, I'm going to help Cloud go back to Sector 7 because we're just a sector away, and I know how to lead the way to get to Sector 7 and introduce Cloud back to his friends." And Eris's mom's like, "All right, cool. Hey, Cloud, can I talk to you just for a quick second?" And so Eris runs upstairs because she's excited, and Cloud talks to Eris's mom, and Eris's mom's like, "Listen,
you gotta go.
You gotta leave. You can spend the night, and I want you out. You're not dragging my daughter into any of this." She has like a very thick Brooklyn accent. There's no voice acting. You have to like slowly walk out of, you have to slowly sneak out of the house, right? And like, mm-hmm. if you walk too fast, the floorboards creak and Eris shows up. She's like, "Hey, what are you doing, silly?
Go back to sleep." I didn't want to leave without her, so I went into her room and was like, "Hey, I'm going to leave." And then the game makes you do
I'm
it
leaving.
Over because that's not what you're supposed to do.
No. The game wants you to, go and leave, and Eris does not get to come with you, except that you leave the house, you escape the house eventually, and then you start making your way back to Sector 7, and somehow, some way, Eris was so fast that she circled out in front of you.
Yeah.
And she's like, "Hey, you trying to leave without me? Come on." And Cloud is like, "I kind of promised your mom. All right, fine, let's go."
"I didn't really want to leave without you, so now I did what I said I would do, and you're here."
Because this weirdo Cloud, who doesn't seem to like anybody, it bears repeating, he's like very cold. You know, he himself has a bit of a too cool for school thing. Maybe some, like, he's dealing with some issues of things that's happened to him in the past. It's mysterious at this point. We don't really know, but he doesn't seem to like get along well. He's mm-hmm. not an extrovert.
No.
You know, he's got a hard time socializing with people. And Eris is like the exact opposite, right? Like, she's like, she's funny. She's got a lot to say. She wants to, you know, draw out the best in people. People seem to really like her. It doesn't seem like it's a coincidence that in this desolate place that gets no sunlight, Eris is able to grow flowers in a garden and stuff, whether that's generational gill or something else, you know? We don't really know. But so she goes with him, and like you have to cross through this sort of like this side street that has a lot of like different like construction site stuff and all these different battles that you have to fight, including, did you encounter the Hell House, Zed?
Yeah, more than once, I think.
The Hell House is a gigantic sentient house that
so
you have to
weird.
Fight.
Deeply bizarre.
Yeah. It's like a house with arms and legs.
And it has a move called like Suicide Drop or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really weird. It doesn't really make much sense why that thing exists. And you have to fight a bunch of them in like random encounters in this one specific area of the game. And the Final Fantasy VII Remake turned the Hell House into like a really difficult boss battle.
Oh, no.
They really leaned into it. They're like, "We have this very strange character design from the original game. Why don't we just blow that out and like have you like get into a huge arena match against a Hell House?" So that happens. So you fight a few Hell Houses, whatever you're fighting, on your way to get back to Sector 7 to reunite with Avalanche, to reunite with Tifa and Barrett, and basically show back up to them and be like, "See, I fell 1,000 feet, but I'm fine. You didn't have to worry. I'm okay." And like you stop in this playground and you're sitting on like this like little cat-like playground thing. I believe that it's modeled after the Moogles. Do you know what a Moogle is, Zed?
Moogles are very important in Final Fantasy IX.
Yes. Do you want to explain what the Moogles are?
Moogles are little pink creatures that are kind
sometimes
of like
white, sometimes yellow, sometimes.
Sure. Mm-hmm. They have a little red ball sticking out of the top of their head. They deliver mail. They are a save point. Mm-hmm. They are a rest point in Final Fantasy IX.
Yeah.
Very integral to the game. And in Final Fantasy X, the bit of it that I played, I don't remember the character's name anymore already, but the like spellcaster woman, her original like companion
Lulu
weapon is a Moogle.
Yeah. She has like a toy Moogle that she casts black magic with.
Yes.
Moogles are even more of a Final Fantasy hallmark than Biggs and Wedge. They're these like little bears with wings that do like little magic. They say a lot of words in some of the games, specifically in FF9. The Moogles really get a lot of traction. I think FF9 is the MVP game for the Moogles, followed probably by Final Fantasy VI, and then followed probably by this one. But there's like this gigantic like slide that's fashioned like a Moogle head. And you'll see more Moogle action not terribly long from now. Probably not by the next podcast, though. So you're on this slide and Cloud's talking to Aeris, and Aeris is like, "Oh, I had a boyfriend in Soldier once." And Cloud's like, "Oh yeah, Soldier." And he has like some sort of weird flash, right? He has like some moment where he's like, "Ah, I don't know what's going on." It keeps happening to Cloud. What's going on?
Cloud is not well.
He's unwell. Cloud is unwell. And so this is where they're about to say goodbye, but then the doors between sectors open up, and on this wagon that's being pulled by a chocobo, which is another animal that is very prolific in the Final Fantasy games. It's basically their version of a horse, but it's a gigantic chicken that you ride.
Yep.
And you're going to have to get into the chocobo stuff at some point, Zed, and I wish you well. That may be a hang-up. We'll have to see. You're going to have to deal with that at some point.
Okay. But
instead of a horse and carriage, it's a chocobo and carriage. Mm-hmm. And on the back of the carriage, lo and behold, is that Tifa? What's Tifa doing here? So Tifa's on a carriage, and Cloud's like, "Wait, that's my friend." And she's on her way. She's out of Sector 7. Cloud's like, "Where's she going?" And Aeris is like, "Oh, well, we got to find out. I'm not leaving that quickly. That's your friend? I want to know more."
Yeah.
This seems like an interesting, compelling story. So you follow the carriage to, the really intense, vibrant section of Midgar known as Wall Market. Not to be confused with Walmart.
No, the Wall Market. Just sort of like a night market in Chinatown, or New Orleans has something kind of like that.
Yeah. The hottest neighborhood in Midgar is Wall Market. It's got everything. It's got a diner with martinis. It's got a gym with crunches and squats. It's got a weapon store that sells batteries. It's got Don Corneo, the pimp king of Walmart. Of Walmart. It's got the Honey Bee Inn. Did you explore the Honey Bee Inn, which is like the brothel?
No. So I know I messed this up. I know there's a whole sequence of events you can do where you like, you get one thing for one person, and then you give that thing to somebody else, and then they give you something, and then they give you something.
There's a lot of like deals you can do in Walmart while you're looking for Tifa. It's like, here's a bunch of shit you can do in this really crazy place that's very elaborate, both in the original and the new game.
Yeah, I got too confused. And
it's very sprawling. It's hard to know what to do.
Did not accomplish all of those things.
But you can go to the brothel, and at one point in one of the rooms of the brothel is one of the 3 feet characters named Palmer, who is the head of the space program for Shinra.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he's just like doing all kinds of suggested ungodly business in the brothel.
Of course.
Does not feel great. Sort of like the Rudy Giuliani of Midgar.
I think Palmer. I'm okay with having skipped that.
Yeah, I think you're okay having missed it as well. Don't worry. There's some stuff coming up with Palmer that I think you will laugh about. Not in this podcast necessarily, but spoiler alert, you may have to fight Palmer at one point, and the way that fight ends is legendary. Really, really, really great. So look forward to that. Very, very fun.
Okay, round 2. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere. This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So you're going through Walmart and you find out that there's this dude, Don Corneo, who is the pimp king of the Walmart. He's got a mohawk and he's got like, he's terrible. He's got like the big red cape and he's just, he has new brides brought to him every night.
This is so gross.
It's really gross. It's really seedy. He has all of these women who are brought to him, and he chooses a different woman every single night. And so Tifa has very clearly taken it upon herself to, like, infiltrate Don Corneo. Like, because he's connected to all of, like, the seedy underground stuff, and Avalanche has caught a hot tip that something's going down, something big. So Tifa's undercover, and she wants to get close to Don Corneo to find out. But Cloud and Eris don't know this yet. All they know is that she's in contention to be his bride of the night, and he always picks three, and, well, there's Tifa. And Eris is like, well, I could get in. And Cloud, we could probably just dress you up like a woman, and the three of us could all go in and infiltrate Don Corneo together. So the next portion of this game is about finding the right dress and hairstylist and makeup regimen for Cloud, as you're trying to get Cloud to be picked by Don Corneo to potentially be his bride for the night. Zed, what did you make of everything surrounding this portion of the story?
So I texted you very early on in my playing process.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And this ended up on Twitter also. My feeling is that no one named Cloud is a cisgender human being. Cloud is like the most, is like such a textbook non-binary name. Non-binary people are known to have like weird nouns as names. I have a friend named Socks. I have a friend named Slats. So Cloud, in my playing of this game, is definitely a non-binary person trying to get over a lot of toxic masculinity that has been forced upon them, and perhaps trying to perform up to that expectation in joining Soldier. And then we get to this mission in the game, and I texted Josh, and I was like, excuse me, now I have to find a dress for this person who's supposed to be a man? I don't think so.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, so I'm all about it. I think it's great. I love this part of the game very much.
Yeah. And so the big question was like, How is this going to translate well to the remake? Like, how are they going to do this? How are they going to play this out? And the remake, I've already told you a little bit offline, like how they handle it. I don't want to ruin it for anyone who hasn't played the remake in case they're interested, because the remake's really great. And if you are into like next gen gaming and you haven't played FF7 remake yet, I recommend you do. And the way that they play all of this out is really, really, really wonderfully done. I just thought it was spectacular. But it's definitely like a very memorable portion of this game is like, get Cloud a dress. So you do, and you can go to the Honeybee Inn and you can get like some special lingerie, and you can go to like this poor guy in a coffee shop and like he'll give you something else or whatever. Like, you could do all sorts of fetch quests, and you can get it to the point that Cloud is so souped up that Don Corneo takes one look at Cloud and goes, oh yeah. And picks Cloud. He's like, yeah, that's the one. That's my bride for the night. Otherwise, I think he kind of just picks Eris, I think. I don't know. He either picks Tifa or Eris.
Yeah, I think based on the walkthrough, depending on what you get, he'll pick different people.
Yeah.
And obviously, fundamentally, it won't matter because you'll all end up in the same place anyway. But you also, so I did the dress and I was like, okay, fine, ready to go. And it's like, oh, no, you have to go get a wig.
Yeah.
Because your weird spiky hair is clearly not gonna definitely work. Male hair,
yes.
I guess.
Yes, yes.
And you have to do a squat competition in the gym.
Yeah.
In order to get a wig from, I guess, some other guy who sometimes does drag, maybe?
Yes, yeah. Appears to be.
And depending on how well you do in the competition, that determines how good the quality of the wig that you get will be.
Yeah. I don't know if this character has a name in the version you're playing. In the remake, Jules. You have to do squats against Jules, and of Jules course. Has like companions. And I don't remember what Jules' pronouns are. But I think that they present Jules as a woman.
Oh, interesting.
In the game. And then there's a different character who I at least perceived as non-binary named Andrea, who who's going to be the one who tells Cloud, like, gender's a construct. You know, none of this matters.
Great.
And I really want you to play Remake specifically for that stuff.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah. It's really well done. I think it's really, really great. So you infiltrate Don Corneo. Tifa and Aeris like hit it off immediately. They're like, oh yeah, Cloud, that guy, right? Oh my God. It's like actually have like a feeling on the matter at some point in time, guy. And he's like, stop making fun of me. And so you have to like fight Don Corneo. Like you fight through to get to Don Corneo, no matter who gets picked. And Don Corneo, like this disgusting pig of a man, is on his like California king, and he's like trying to like mac it to whoever he's chosen.
There's like some thrusting animation.
There's a lot of thrusting animation that happens. It's all in the hips. And it's really weird. And then everyone comes in and like reveal themselves. Yeah, we're here to like get some intel out of you. And he's like, well, I'm not going to tell you anything. They're like, well, if you don't, and then they make all sorts of threats about what they're going to do to his genitals. That's heavily implied. Yes. Of like, well, I'll punch him. And then like, there's like all these like heavy yeah. threats that always end in like, I'll smash him. And he's like, oh,
yeah.
Stay away. It's no good.
Yeah.
I don't want you to do this. And so he's cowering in the corner, and he finally gives up the intel that if you thought Shinra was bad before, Zed, get a load of this. Not only did they let that second reactor blow up so that they could pin it on Avalanche, they're going to do one better. They're going to drop an entire segment of the upper plate onto Sector 7 and blame it on Avalanche. They're going right. to say this was another Avalanche terrorist attack, and they believe that this is going to be the nail in the coffin that proves that this is an extremist group that is at war with Midgar and is at war with conventional society, and everyone will fall in line with Shinra, and Shinra is so ruthless that they are willing to wipe out an entire sector of Midgar, as well as presumably the people who live on that plate are yeah. all dead too, is their plan.
Yeah.
That's what they've got in mind. And so Cloud and Tifa and Aeris are like, well, shit, that can't happen. We got to stop that. And so they're about to leave. And then Don Corneo is like, yeah, but before you go, just fall into this dungeon. And so like he has like this secret trap door in his bedroom that takes you into a sewer. And you have to fight like some sewer monsters.
Yep.
You have to go through the sewers and fight some other things. Then you get to the train graveyard, as you've mentioned, Zed. That's pretty close to Sector 7 that you spent a long time in.
A lot of time in the train graveyard.
It's hard because you have to like go around like hopping into all these like train husks,
yeah.
moving them and like getting them positioned
oh,
just
yeah,
right
that,
so you can climb
no
them.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
That was definitely a spot where I had to look. I was like, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing, and I can't just like walk out. There's no yeah. exits. Like, where am I supposed to go? So I had to use the walkthrough for a little help with the...
Yeah, I don't know how you do that without a walkthrough. A lot of this game, I don't know how you do yeah. without a walkthrough.
You have to go into the train, and then the train will start moving. But other ones, you just have to walk through them.
Yeah.
But other ones, you have to walk on top of them. I'm like,
it's
oh, this
tough.
Thing is
yeah,
a door.
Ladders.
This thing is not a door. Yeah.
These, you know, at the time, these were like absolute next level graphics. And now, like, the pre-rendered backgrounds and stuff. It's like, I don't know how I would, that, you know, it's hard to hop back to that. Like, some of it, like, is just like literally because of like hard of sight. It's like, I'm having a hard time seeing the details.
Well, and sometimes you enter a screen and it's like so zoomed out that I can't even tell
where you are.
I am.
Yes.
And
yeah.
I'll leave the screen and have to come back because it's reloaded the place that I was before.
Do you use like all the arrows and stuff or
I've,
no?
I've turned that on recently
because
it's been really helpful for figuring out where doors and things are that I would not necessarily perceive as exits.
As doors.
Yeah. As doors.
Like there's, you hit select on your controller and like it puts like a literally like a Mickey Mouse glove on top of
right.
Cloud's
it's like,
head.
Here's
it's like,
where
you're
you
here.
Are.
This is you.
Yeah.
And they put like little red arrows on like things that like are your doors and exits and stuff. So if you're getting lost, that's a way to do it. You go through the train graveyard, which is a huge to-do in the remake. It's, you know, a to-do here, but like not by design, just like kind of like flawed design, difficult. But they really make a meal out of it in the remake. And you get through and you get to the like where the pillar is that holds up the plate for Sector 7, and it's going down. Shinra's here, and they're totally gonna drop the plate. And it's not good. My guy Wedge falls off the pillar and lands in front of Cloud. He's like, we're under attack, and it doesn't look good for Wedge.
No.
And so Cloud and Tifa are like, all right, well, we gotta go up there because Barrett's fighting and we gotta help him. Mm-hmm. And but what about Marlene? She's running the bar. Baby Marlene, the baby bartender. And Eris is like, oh, there's a baby running a bar. I'm pretty sure I could figure out who's the bartender. So I'll go. I'll take care of that. I could probably put together which one you're talking about. That's enough of a description for me. Yeah. So Eris goes off to save the baby bartender while Cloud and Tifa fight their way up. Biggs has been shot. He's not looking good. They find Jesse. Jesse's been shot as well. She's not looking great. You have opportunities, Zed, to talk to these people along the way, and like you've got like decisions to make of how you want to respond to them. And you can either choose that like Cloud is developing empathy or that Cloud is still just like a total zero. Where did you go with Cloud as far as these conversations with Biggs and Jesse?
As a deeply empathetic person myself, I definitely went for the more empathetic options because I know Jesse says like, I'm glad I got to see you one more time, or like something
one
to
last
that
time,
effect.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's so nice. Like, okay. And sad.
That's like, oh, totally me too. Definitely not thinking about Tifa or Eris. Definitely thinking about you.
Yeah.
And so that they have to keep going up this sprawling staircase. They get to the top. Barrett's there. He's shooting around. You have to fight the Turks, or at least one of the Turks. Reno is there. Remember Reno? He's back. It's this Turk. He's got the red hair and he's got like his electric powered stick. He's like, I'm going to push the button. And if I push this button, this plate's going down. And don't be mad at me. I'm just following orders.
Classic.
It's a job. I didn't do anything wrong. I'm pushing a button because the job tells me to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I can emotionally detach myself from the job because it's just a paycheck. So you fight Reno. And was that a hard one? He has like an electric pyramid that he puts on you. You have to like fight the electric pyramid.
Oh,
otherwise,
yeah, that was kind of annoying.
Drives out all of your hit points.
Right. He casts that on your characters, and then you have to attack your own party in order to break it up so that they can continue to fight. Otherwise, you don't have that character as playable for a while.
Yeah. Friendly fire. So you beat him, but even though you beat him, he still like pushes the button. Mm-hmm. And so, like, the destruction of the plate is imminent. And then the leader of the Turks, a guy named Seng, shows up on a helicopter. And he's like, hey, by the way, we've got your friend, Eris. And Eris is on the helicopter. Mm-hmm. So they've kidnapped her. And she tries to, like, at least, like, comfort you enough. Like, don't worry, I got the baby bartender out of there. She's fine. I did that, at least, but I did get caught. And so they fly off and you're kind of left to wonder, like, why did the Turks keep, what did they want with Eris? She's just the flower girl. What in all of this, in the middle of all of this, what's going on? So they fly off and like, you don't really have a lot of time to process that, Zed, because you're like, well, shit, I got to get out of here before the plate drops. And right. So speaking of wires, Barrett's like, oh, well, hey, look, there's a wire over there. I will grab it with my one hand. And then, Tifa, you latch onto one arm, and Cloud, you get on my shoulders.
Yep.
And the three of us will swing away from the falling plate on a wire that I am one-handedly holding while the two of you are holding onto delicate parts of my body with tremendous velocity and momentum and kinetic energy on our way out of this exploding sector.
Listen, I didn't go to school for physics.
They have like a cutscene that like like, if not for the fact that, like, the stakes are very real, and the way that it's, like, cinematic, at least for me, I mean, obviously I'm editorializing. I don't know what your experience was with this, but I could tell you, like, formatively as a kid, you know, I'm like a seventh grader playing this game, Zed, and, like, the bad guys are this false flag. They're dropping the plate on their own people.
Yeah.
And, like, the way that they play it, like, yeah, it's goofy to watch, like, Barrett and Cloud and Tifa do, like, a human pyramid wire trick to get out of there. But it's a video game. But the way that, like, they render, like, the death and destruction, like, there's, like, a shot of, like, somebody, like, in their house watching news coverage on a TV as you see, like, the plate is descending out their window. And clearly it's going to hit them. And when the plate finally lands, the dichotomy is so apparent because, like, the camera pans up to this gigantic Shinra headquarters building, which is at the epicenter of Midgar.
Right.
It's the gigantic tower that's the defining feature of Midgar aside from the plate, that, like, you could even get to the top level of the plate and there would still be higher to go. And you go to the very tippy top floor and there's President Shinra all but swirling a wine glass, literally listening to opera as he watches the carnage ensue. And probably is looking at it being like, a job well done.
Yeah. There's a scene kind of like this in Far Cry 3, and I won't spoil that game, but, like, there's a bad guy where something like this is going down, and, like, Flight of the Valkyries is, like, being played on his radio at the same time, and it feels very much like that.
Yeah. It's supremely messed up.
Yeah.
Like, really, really intense, really messed up. You get, like, once you get control of your characters back, you're back in, like, that playground with the Moogle slide, and Barrett is losing his mind. He's just, like, shooting his Gatling gun at the wall because he thinks, you know, Biggs is dead, Jesse is dead, Wedge is dead, and he's right. They're gone.
Yeah.
Everybody that they know is gone, and he thinks Marlene is gone as well. And
right.
Then Cloud's like, oh, yeah, the baby bartender? She's okay. I'm pretty sure she's all right.
Yeah. Our friend Eris from the helicopter said that she's fine, so that must be correct.
So they go back to Eris's house, and they see that Marlene's okay. She's now living with Eris's mom. And Eris's mom is like, all right, Cloud, I told you. God, did I tell you not to get her to get her involved, but I knew it was coming. I don't know why I've decided to do Charlie
she's
voice.
Charlie from the
I forget the name of Eris's mom. It's like Elmira or something.
Yeah.
But it was, she's Grandma Charlie, Eris's mother. And she says, so I got to tell you something. I may as well at this point let you know that Eris, not Aerith, for the sake of the U.S. translation for the 1997 release of Final Fantasy VII, it's Eris, is a member of this secret ancient race of people literally called the Ancients, who are like these magic dwelling, you know, sacred people who have this very holy connection to the planet. And they are all but extinct. They're all gone, save for one. There may be one still left.
Guess who?
It's the Flower Girl. And so, like, they show you, like, this flashback of Eris's mom, her birth mother. Who died on the train tracks, and Eris's mother, like, saved her or saved Eris and then raised Eris. And Eris, as, like, a kid, used to be like, I've got all these weird things to tell you. Like, there's this war that's playing out in the background between Shinra and a far-off nation called Wutai. And that's sort of just like background detail that you can explore a little deeper in the game, but it's not, to use the Dan Lembo term, mandatory. But you can get there, and that may or may not have something to do with this optional character who I will advise you on coming up for the next podcast. Eris's mother's husband was fighting in that war, and Eris, as like a kid, is like, yeah, don't worry, like, he's returned to the planet. And the next day, she gets the telegram that her husband has died.
Right.
So that's like how she knows, like, okay, without a shadow of a doubt, sort of like the way that Julianne Moore really believes in Nicolas Cage's next powers and next. Eris's mother has no doubt that Eris has this communion, this sacred communion with the planet and with spirits and stuff. And so Shinra has had their eye on Eris for a long time. And the Turks, like even Seng seems to have like tried to have like some sort of like chill relationship with Eris, like being like, Eris, don't you want to come with us? And Eris is like, no, I don't trust you guys. And Seng's like, all right, well, I guess I'll, for whatever reason, we as an organization who are these bloodthirsty sons of bitches will just like let you live your life for a while and then we'll swoop in and kidnap you. Logistically, I don't know that that ever really tracked for me. But they waited a long time. And so now that you find out all of this information, Cloud, who is like starting to come out of his shell a little bit, is like, well, okay. I know typically you all know me as the guy who doesn't like anyone. But I'm like the bad friend in the group. It's always about me and get me my gill. Where's my gill at? Right. But they got Eris, and I got to go get her. I'm going to go. And so Tifa's like, oh, she's my friend now, too. We made fun of you at Don Corneo's mansion. So, like, we're tight. I'm not letting anything bad happen to her. And Barret's like, oh, well, she saved my bartending baby daughter. I got to at least go and thank her.
Right.
And also, we should probably get some revenge for Biggs and Wedge and Jesse and everybody who was literally crushed in Sector 7. You never get to go back there, Zed. Sector 7's destroyed. Yeah. It's gone. Everything. It's wiped out. It's gone. And so you go back to Wall Market and you literally you have to buy some batteries. And you have to climb a wire, a shiny wire of hope, is what Barret says. And you climb this wire, you climb past all the plates, you get to the surface, you plug all these batteries in to get higher, and you get to Shinra headquarters, the gigantic Shinra HQ in the sky. And you have two approaches, Zed. You can you have to infiltrate Shinra, and there's one of two ways that you can do it. You can either go in gun hand a-blazing and fight your way up to the top, or you can climb 60 flights of stairs. And,
yeah.
and the game will make you do that. You'll have to climb 60 flights of stairs. It'll probably take you like 4 to 5 minutes to do.
Yeah, yes, it will. And yes, I did.
Yeah.
It's another spot where I texted you in the process and I was like, I did not realize they literally meant you would personally, actually, physically have to climb every single flight of stairs.
Every single step. You got to do the whole thing.
And the dialogue reward is like funny. One high potion in the middle.
Nothing. Yeah. And like throughout, like you like go, like you see like Barret and Tifa are like heaving and like heavy breathing. On their way up.
Barret's threatening to go back down at like
yeah, Barret's like, I can't do this. I can't do this anymore. And you're like, Barret, we are too far to turn back. It will require more effort to
go back down,
than to continue forward.
I've been holding down this X key and pushing my directional pad. We're going.
You have to like talk him down. So now you're in the Shinra building, and this is where most of the rest of what you have played takes place. It's like you have to infiltrate the Shinra building. You have to do a bunch of tasks. There's like some puzzles that you got to do. You got to like hang out with the mayor and solve his library puzzle.
Yeah.
The most important thing, like, you can yada yada through that. There's a lot of, like, little, like, fetch quest type stuff, like, little, like, detail-oriented stuff that the game makes you do in terms of gameplay. But the story point is that you get to the level of, like, where all of, like, the higher-ups hold their board meetings. And there's a bathroom nearby where it's very drafty. And if you go into the drafty stall, you notice that there is a vent that you can go in. So you don't get caught venting. But Cloud, Barret, and Tifa go full imposter. They vent from the bathroom to, like, the top of the corporate boardroom meeting and listen in. And they're talking about all sorts of stuff and a bunch of characters that you're meeting here for the first time. Zed, do you remember any of the people from the Shinra Inner Circle, or is it still too early for you to attach names and faces to these
people? Well, Palmer's there, right?
Palmer's there. He's sort of this Danny DeVito type who literally runs the space program, which is like kind of like an underfunded nonsense division of Shinra. He just gets money and power. And like occasionally every once in a while, they entertain a couple of his space endeavors. But Shinra does not seem to care too much about the space race.
And there's that douchey guy that you talk to and fight later, whose name I can't remember.
We'll put a pin in him because he's important.
Yeah.
There's Scarlet.
Mm-hmm.
Who is the one who, like, as she leaves the board meeting, like, looks up at the vent and goes, "It smells like poop in here," or something like that.
Yeah, it smells bad.
Yeah, it smells bad. I think that she's the head of weapons development. Then there's Heidegger, who is another 3 foot roundman, who has like a huge, huge, huge beard, has a green military suit. He's in charge of the military. And he laughs. The game implies a really annoying laugh because it is written out, "Gya-ha-ha-ha-ha." That's how they write that out. Then there's this guy named Reeve. He's mm-hmm. this strapping lad, Reeve, in this royal blue suit. He's got a thin beard and cool hair. He looks like a nice guy. He's in charge of urban development. And he's like, "I don't feel good about what we've done here." He's the author of the Midgar Times op-ed of "I'm the adult in the room."
Yeah, the anonymous.
Yeah, yeah.
Some of us inside are concerned, so don't worry.
Yeah, I'm very concerned about what's happening here at Shinra. So those are really the characters, and there's President Shinra, and then there's Hojo, is the guy you're talking about.
He sucks.
He's got glasses, got a lab coat, he's a science dude, he's like very into his science projects, and his science projects aren't like cool science. His science projects are like, "Let me do deeply unethical experiments on people."
Right.
And animals.
Right.
And so like you follow Hojo back to Hojo's lab after the meeting.
Gotta go to the specimen room.
Because it seems like he's the one who's got Eris, right? And so, like, you go to the specimen room, and on your way to the specimen room, Cloud sees this thing in the corner. There's, like, a refrigerator. And in the refrigerator, there appears to be a severed alien head. It's, like, some sort of, like, weird... It looks kind of like Krang from the Ninja Turtles. I don't know if they assign a name to this thing at this point in time.
It starts with a J. I think.
So they do. Genova.
Yeah.
Genova's witness. So here's Genova, this crazy alien head in this little refrigerator in the corner. And everyone's like, "Whoa, Cloud, why are you freaking out about that?" And he starts like having like some real panic. It's like, "Oh, some bad stuff's going down." But there's no time to panic about that. It's like, let's put a pin in that. That's a future problem. Right now, Hojo's doing bad science on a dog. And so there is this...
Bad science on a dog.
He's doing bad science to that dog. There's the introduction of our latest and final playable character of this portion of the adventure, Zed.
Yeah.
The namesake for your Final Fantasy VII name, Red 13.
Yes.
Who is this talking little red tiger lion dog-like guy with a fiery tail and a scar on his face. And he talks a lot more than certainly like Barrett's like, "Whoa, it talks, it speaks."
Yeah. He's like, yeah, we can talk about that later. Right now, we got to fight Hojo.
Yes. Red 13 is like straight to biz. Red 13's like, "Dude, I get it. I get misjudged all the time. People have a lot of confusion about what am I all about?
But not right now. We don't have
time. But not now. We can have a conversation about that later if you'd like." And so Red 13 is just like, "For now, I'm just going to like hang out with you guys and because I also dislike Shinra. They've turned me into some sort of research experiment and I would very much like to be done with that." And so Red 13 joins the party. Do you like Red 13?
I do. I've kept Red 13 in my party as much as possible moving forward.
Yeah, Red 13 is good. Red 13's good peeps. So we'll have a lot more on Red 13 in the not terribly distant future. So Red 13 joins the party. Eris joins up again, and everything's great. It's like, all right, well, we saved Eris. Let's get out of here. So you go in, as you do when you're invading, when you're in the middle of like literal corporate espionage in the middle of a secret operation, you just take the elevator and get out of there.
Yeah. Well, and on the way up too, like once you've gotten into the building and climbed your 60 flights of stairs, then you acquire these various passes for the escalators or the doors or whatever. But you can fundamentally just like walk around and you can talk to the people and they're all like, you must be new here.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not a whole lot of like, what is this person? The security seems a bit lax.
Yeah. But you get on this one elevator, and then there's another member of the Turks. You haven't met this one yet. His name's Rude. Very rude dude.
Yeah.
Bald, sunglasses, kind of looks like the war dog. And he's like, "You going up? Could you push up for me?" It's like, oh, I think he's not asking.
Yeah.
Pretty sure he's telling me. So he takes you to President Shinra, and President Shinra's like, "Yeah, what'd you think you were going to do? You're going to
just walk in and walk out?
You're just going to walk in and walk out?" And it's like, well, actually, you know, that is literally what was done.
We did most of that.
You know, we basically did do that. He's like, well, you thought you were just going to take the elevator out? There were going to be no consequences? They're like, oh, kind of. But no, he like gives them a speech. What does he tell these people? Because I know that this connected with you, the President Shinra speech.
Right. So this is where he's discussing, yes, we've destroyed the plate inside. We've destroyed Sector 7 entirely. Yeah. And originally that was with the plan to rebuild it. But no, we're just going to leave it destroyed because it's too expensive to rebuild it.
Why would we bother? That money can go elsewhere.
Blame it on Antifa. Move on.
Yeah. What's the point? You guys, everyone thinks you did it. We have scored the moral victory. The money and resources could be used elsewhere, i.e. my pockets.
Mm-hmm.
So why? Why even rebuild it? And Barrett's like, oh, you sons of bitches. Oh, I'm so mad.
Yeah. What's to be gained from building housing?
Yeah.
That doesn't make me money.
Nothing. As it pertains.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing for President Shinra. He doesn't care. Meanwhile, Reeve is like, but can we? And he's like, Reeve, shut up. And then Reeve writes his op-ed.
Yeah.
So President Shinra's like, all right, well, I guess I'll just throw y'all in jail. So you go to prison. You go into like these holding cells. You get to have some chats with everybody. Everybody's thinking about a different thing. I don't remember if you get to talk to Red 13. I think he's a little too new for you to have like a deep convo with Red 13 at this point. But Barrett's like, I miss Marlene.
Mm-hmm.
And Tifa's like, Cloud, you all right? Cause sometimes I feel like, there might be something off with you. And it's possible that I'm a bit of an authority on all things Cloud Strife, considering we were friends, you know, as kids. And Cloud's like, ah, we're good. No, I don't want to talk about it. And Eris is like, yeah, I've been special my whole life. You know, and she's just like flexing. But she's like, you know, waxing poetic about this, and everyone's just kind of thinking about it. And like, I don't know. Well, we're in jail. Getting out of here is going to be tough. Maybe let's just sleep it off, come up with a plan in the morning. Zed, they don't have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
The plan comes to them.
Yes.
And by the plan, I mean a man, a violent man who has come to Shinra HQ at some point during all of this. And Cloud wakes up, and the door to his cell is open. And there's blood everywhere.
Everywhere.
There's blood on the floor. The cells are open. People are dead. They all get out. They're like, okay, I guess we followed the blood trail.
Yep.
Instead of being like, maybe let's actually take the elevator and leave.
Rather than just like leaving.
elevator or blood trail? And everyone in unison says blood trail.
Yeah.
So they follow the blood trail. And the blood trail leads to what?
You get upstairs, so you go back up to the to Hojo's lab,
mm-hmm.
and then you continue in the elevator up to President Shinra's, you know, executive office suite floor, and you find a dead President Shinra with this important sword in his back.
Yeah, this if Cloud Strife's sword is comically thick, this is like a comically long sword. Which you'll see more in, like, cutscenes and stuff. But this sword is, like, 8 feet. I have the action figure for this character.
Of course you do.
Of course I do. And the sword is, like, longer than the character. Makes posing him very difficult. But so there's this giant sword that has been skewered into President Shinra. And it's, like, on one hand, it's like, nice!
Yeah.
Okay!
Solves and that then, problem.
And then on the other hand, it's like, but who did that? Mm-hmm. And Palmer's just like hiding in the corner and they're like, oh, that guy, the Danny DeVito is here. And it's Space Danny. And so they go, Space Danny, come here. And they like grill him for a minute. He's like, it was Sephiroth. And they're like, Sephiroth? And then Cloud's like, Sephiroth. Oh, God. And so it's a name that means a lot pretty clearly to Cloud.
Right.
And how much about Sephiroth do you know at this point in the story?
Not a lot, I feel like, unless I missed something, which is certainly possible, but I feel like the name keeps coming up and clearly there's a history and it's important to Cloud, but I don't feel like I know a whole lot about who Sephiroth is.
I think what you should glean, and I imagine that you've gleaned it, is like there is now kind of like this wild card factor.
Mm-hmm.
Like this thing that was like resistance versus evil empire has an additional element in it that is now arriving in the form of this sort of like this Baba Yaga, this boogeyman.
Okay.
You know, there's the secret monster under the bed. Sephiroth is the name.
And it would appear
that he's killed a lot of people here in Shinra.
And it's like his signature sword, or it's a sword that like only he can use, or there's something, it's very like King Arthur, like we can't even take this sword out of his body because it has special powers or something.
Yeah, they don't really go too deep into it, but that's effectively it, I think, is like it's just sort of his signature thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a bit of a continuity thing where like they find President Shinra with the sword in his back. Like, all the next times that you see Sephiroth, he's just going to have his sword again. So don't worry about that. Just kind of forget that he left it there.
I mean, leaving it behind is a weird move.
Yeah, maybe he just kind of went back. He's like, oh, shit, I forgot that. And he went back and picked it up. But President Shinra is dead. So you're like, okay, well, we should probably leave here. But then a helicopter shows up. And there he is, the new man in charge, Rufus. Rufus, who is the vice president of Shinra. Is the strawberry blonde son of the now late, not so great President Shinra. Rufus has been informed of his father's death. Mm-hmm. If this was succession, then Logan Roy is dead. Kendall is stepping up, and here he is. And he's, it turns out, at least as bad, if not maybe worse. He's like kind of like the young, charismatic, like. Like my dad was an idiot.
Yeah.
My dad didn't go far enough.
I think the dialogue that I sent you the picture of was something to the effect of like, my dad ruled with money, but I'm going to rule with fear.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, he's great. Like, great.
It's like dad was onto something when he dropped a plate on people, but like he should have taken it further.
Yeah. Rufus, he sucks.
You're like, oh God. I thought he looked really cool as a kid. I told you the other day. I was like, I tried to style myself for my bar mitzvah based on Rufus Shinra. It doesn't look the same.
It's troubling. It's deeply troubling.
That picture's out there. I'll send it to you. That picture has made the rounds. Right. I was like, oh, he's got like the white suit and the black shirt. Like that's a cool look.
And so
I got like this like very beige suit.
Mm-hmm.
And like a black t-shirt and like my horrible mushroom cut. I was like, yeah, that's it. I look exactly like him. So cool.
Spitting image.
Yeah, yeah.
Of a despotic child.
He looks cool. You know, he's like an evil babe.
Mm-hmm.
And so Cloud's like, all right, everyone leave. I'm going to just kick the shit out of this guy because he sucks. And I feel like I should probably fight him.
Yeah.
And you all should get out of here. So everyone leaves. Cloud fights Rufus and his dog.
Yeah.
He's like, I gotta fight your dog too. All right, yeah. I'll fight your dog. If you're gonna make me do that, I'll do it. So you have to fight Rufus and his dog. And then Eris and Barrett and their dog, Red 13, have to fight some robots.
Mm-hmm.
And this is another one of those back to back fights, right, Zed, where you don't get a save point.
Yeah,
so you're probably
to do this
furious.
One twice.
Yeah,
and you have to do the whole cutscene beforehand first, also.
So yes,
and because the second time I went to do it, I tried to save, like after they separate, after you've done the cutscene, and Cloud is like, "Okay, we're gonna divide up," and you organize your party. I tried to go back into the room to the save point, and I was like, "I don't want to watch the cutscene for a third time. If I die again, I would like to move forward," and it won't let you do that. But fortunately, I knew to like. The second time that I did it, to rearrange all the materia, and so that they all, because if you don't have magic on the elevator, you're screwed.
Because it's a long range fight, so like you can't brawl through it.
So
you have
Red
to cast
13
spells.
Is not super useful to you if Red 13
unless he
is
has
not
magic.
Equipped with magic. Yeah,
yeah. And literally, Barrett's the only one like in kind of like a Barrett would just be able to fight anyway because he's got the gun hand.
Right.
But he's the only one if you don't have everyone equipped with magic. So you got to equip with magic. Fight the robots. Cloud beats up Rufus. Cloud escapes. Shinra's got everybody surrounded. So pretty clearly the only way we're going to get out of this thing is a car chase.
Of course.
As you do.
Yeah, you got to play Mario Kart in your Final Fantasy VII game.
So you have to escape from Midgar via Midgario Kart.
Yes.
It is what occurs. Cloud is on a motorcycle and everybody else is on a pickup truck. And like you have to play this mini game to escape Midgar where all these Shinra troopers are on their bicycles and you have to hit them with your Buster Sword and protect your friends. And there's very, very, very cool music that's playing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the music all the way through is really tremendous. I love the music all the way through.
It's been great.
The bike music is really dope. And you have to do that and you have to fight a boss afterwards. And I always dreaded playing this part. Like anytime I would replay Final Fantasy VII, because I've like played this game like every 2 years for my entire life since the game first came out. I just love this game very much. And I always get very nervous when the motorcycle stuff happens because I don't have like the dexterity to do it well, Zed.
Yeah, me neither. That's what I was. I made it through in one shot, and
that's
I was shocked. I was like,
"It's hard.
There's no way. There's no
way."
The
controls are a little weird. They're kind of antiquated.
Yeah,
like you have to like time it right. That like if you hit like the square button on the left, then you swing to the left. You have to hit the circle. You swing to the right,
mm-hmm.
and it's just kind of hard. And like I always get like I don't even know if it's possible, but I used to get anxious like. Am I hurting my friends?
Right.
If I'm like hitting them a little bit?
Right.
That was really scary to me. So you complete the bike chase, you fight another robot monster thing, and then like you're all standing on the edge of this incomplete highway ramp. This road to nowhere, Zed.
Mm-hmm.
This is a nice stark visual metaphor for the way that Shinra built out Midgar.
Yeah.
And you're all standing there at the edge of the highway being like, what's out there? What is the world like beyond this place? And, now we know that like Shinra is doing bad stuff and we've like done the most of our fight that we can do here in Midgar. And also who's this Sephiroth guy, Cloud? And Cloud's like, I knew he'd come back someday. I've been waiting. And now that I know he's here, I know that I've never seemed to give much of a shit about anything all the way through, but I really, I hate this Sephiroth guy, and I'll tell you why, but you gotta come with me and fight him. And so everyone's like, well, I guess it kind of feels like the momentum for the game is to go with you and do this.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone comes up with a reason of like why they're going to leave. Like Tifa's like, back out into the world. And Eris is like, I've never seen the world. And Red 13's like, I'm a dog. And... And so everyone's going to go. And that's effectively where you've left it.
That's where I'm at, yeah. Well, I've sent Barrett and Tifa. Antifa.
yes.
How did it take us 2 hours
and
to get to
Tifa.
Antifa?
Antifa. Great alternate name for Avalanche.
Yeah, because you can only have three people in your party. So I sent Barrett and Tifa back. I guess, and I have Eris and Red 13 with me in my party.
Yeah, and you you use like a cell phone service to call them like if you want them in your party. I don't know if you've got that yet. But
no,
that's coming.
I got to the save point where they kick you out and you're in area near Midgar or whatever it's called, and I saved there and I have waited until we were able to talk about it before I continued.
So, obviously, the game has just opened up in a fairly big way. Like, you're now on a world map.
Mm-hmm.
You're, like, not in the urban sprawl of Midgar anymore. Shinra remains a very, very big concern, but there also may be this additional thing to be worried about.
Mm-hmm.
And Cloud has some splaining to do. This is roughly where the remake ends. The remake may or may not do a couple of things a little bit differently from the way the whole Midgar chapter plays out in the original, but it's roughly at this point that the remake ends. But I would say that you're probably like maybe 10%, not even 10% of the way through the game and the story at this point. So the whole big world that's out there waiting for you. And
now
so
I can save anytime I want.
Well, if you're on the map, yes. If you're on the map, well, yes. Yeah. If you go into towns and locations and stuff like that, you still got to find like these little question mark save points.
Sure.
And those will be the things. Zed, before we wrap up, I've got some feedback for you from people who I said we were going to do the FF7 podcast. So this comes from Condor24, knowing that you played Final Fantasy IX before you played FF7. Mm-hmm. Condor24 says, what do you think of the change of pace from FF9's medieval fantasy setting to the more steampunk setting, at least through Midgar? And I would, just to like make that even broader, how is like sort of like this like steampunk feel, the urban sprawl type, like just sort of like the tone and the time of the setting, the world in which this game is inhabiting, is that resonating with you yet? Like, is that popping for you in any way?
That's interesting. I don't know if Final Fantasy IX was my friend's favorite game because he is also, it's a somebody I know from the Renaissance Fair. So I don't know if
that. Yeah, you used to be in that circuit,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. I performed at the New York Fair for several summers. So I don't know if that has to do with part of why FF9 is his favorite game. FF7, like the world of it is certainly more directly relevant, I think, to our world. Excuse me. To our world now, and like the class distinctions of it. Steampunk at this point in time, I feel like has become a little bit like overplayed, but obviously that was not necessarily the case in 1997. But it's fun for me. I'm not like worn out on the steampunk idea the way that I think some people are.
This is from Al Hara, who says, can you predict where the plot is going?
No.
Do you have any ideas, Zed? Do you have any instinct for where this story is going?
I mean, I hope it involves the downfall of Shinra, but it sounds like we're also moving in this direction of revenge against Sephiroth or something to that degree. Mm-hmm. As we talked about a little earlier, I now think it's possible that that Cloud is also an ancient. That feels like the kind of, like, there's a character reveal in Final Fantasy IX that I feel like would be of a similar level to finding out way into the game that Cloud is also an ancient. So that's, I think I'll keep an eye out for hints of that as I move forward.
That anticipates the question from Ralphie, who said, the question that I always ask my friends who are playing for the first time is, are you confused about what's going on with Cloud?
No. Not particularly. I mean, I'm confused about the references to Sephiroth because I don't think we know a whole lot about him. But, like, Cloud's been through some stuff.
Yeah.
And he's trying to process it. And I think we all get that.
Yeah. I think your read on him is great, by the way. And I think it's going to hold. I think you'll awesome. I think you'll be good. I think you'll be good with that. And then one more from Drayson, the great David Maloney, says, do you have a preference in terms of the character of Tifa or Aeris?
I wonder, I mean...
This is a big debate in the fandom.
Is this, like, relationship-wise versus,
I don't know.
Like, player,
the way that the question is phrased is preference, Tifa or Aeris. So, however you want to divide that.
Because, like, I picked Aeris for my battle party because her limit break is healing wind, and she heals all your characters really, really substantially when she hits her limit break. Tifa's limit breaks are not as powerful in my experience. So from a purely game mechanic standpoint, I chose to keep Aeris over Tifa.
Yeah.
It's interesting because with the way materia works, you don't as strictly have like dark magic and white magic the way that you do in some of the other games where like in Final Fantasy IX, Vivi is like the dark mage. So it's cool that you can give
best character in all of Final Fantasy. Don't at me.
Wow.
Yeah, it's my favorite.
So in this game, you can give the magic to any of the characters, which I think makes the party more flexible. Relationship wise, I don't know. I feel like I don't know enough about Aeris or Tifa as people, really, to have strong feelings about who would make a better partner for poor Cloud, who, like, Cloud's got to, like, figure some things out before that's on the table.
Cloud's got to get into a relationship with himself before he gets into a relationship with anyone else. Some self-reflection that needs to go on. We had some funny podcast name suggestions. Not that we need one necessarily, but like Mole Patrol is so sing-songy, and you know I love a good podcast name because I'm an idiot, and it's a thing that I like. So we had a few fun ones. One was Cloud Control from Drayson. One was from Al Hara, was Under the Plate, which would be like Down the Hatch, but Midgar-themed. Condor 24 took that a step further, and because if you die in battle to bring someone back to life, you use an item called a Phoenix Down. So Condor 24 said Phoenix Down the Hatch, which I kind of think is great.
It is great.
Condor 24 also had Josh and Zed Mako Podcast.
Mako Podcast. I get it. I get it.
And also had To the Limit Break. I don't know. I think we're, if anyone's got suggestions, we're open. Otherwise, we're just talking Final Fantasy VII here.
Yeah.
But I think, Phoenix Down the Hatch really cracked me up.
Phoenix Down the Hatch is very funny.
I thought that was great.
I do recall on a Wiggle Room, I believe it was the great Phil T who referenced Phoenix Down in his song and then dropped Final Fantasy VII music.
Oh, yeah. You're getting there. In fact, you'll get there next time. Do you have anything you want to get into that we didn't get into from this first portion of the game?
I don't think so. I feel like we've talked it through. The class stuff and the gender stuff, and those are the things that I talk about.
Yeah. So next time, the music that the great Phil T dropped in a wand off once upon a time is gonna blast in your ears. We are going to get through, this is the next point that I want to get you through. There's going to come a time in the not terribly distant future, Zed, where you will find your characters on a boat. Okay?
Okay.
You'll be on a boat,
and
then you will not be on a boat.
Okay.
And when you are no longer on that boat, that is when we will reconvene for our next recap of your journey through Final Fantasy VII. We'll talk through everything that you've experienced. Expect it'll be a shorter podcast than this one.
Great.
I always say that.
Yeah.
And it never is. So get to the boat and then get off the boat. Things will happen.
Okay.
And we'll have much to discuss. The storyline will come into greater clarity in time for the next podcast.
I'm excited.
Was this fun?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. It's a rhetorical question. Obviously, you and I had a blast.
Oh, yeah.
But did you?
The people.
Out there? Did the people? If you've never played Final Fantasy VII, like, could you follow along? If you've played Final Fantasy VII, was this nostalgic? We want to know. Send us feedback. We don't have a feedback email for this. You can just email me, joshaposhorecaps.com. You can also at me, at @RoundHoward. You can at Zed13, at Hard Rock Hope, but no spoilers, I swear.
No spoilers.
I will chase you down. I will fight you. Limit break. You don't want to see my limit break. It's just wombat water. I'm stealing it from the wombat water people. You don't want to see that, so be cool. You can join us in the Discord if you're already there. That's awesome. Say hi. Let us know what you thought of the podcast. We want to know. If you're not yet a member of the Patreon for Post Show Recaps, hey, you could sign up, patreon.com/postshowrecaps. Or if you want a link to that Final Fantasy Discord, hit me up. I'm happy to provide it. It's a great place. Shadow Discord. It predates the patron Discord.
Yeah.
You can't be jealous. And this is a very, very good community. I love those people. So I'm excited to talk more in there. I'm excited to talk more in the patron Discord. Zed, it's been way too long since we've had like a really long podcast together.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, it feels really good to know something better than you do. This doesn't happen for me very often.
I think you know lots of things better than I do. It just happens to be the one thing we consistently podcasted about was something I knew more about.
Well, that's great. I enjoyed it. What a great time for me to relive my Final Fantasy VII experience through your fresh perspective.
A treat for all of us.
Speaking of games, Brooklyn Zed and I, of course, are the number one and number two Brooklyn Nets fans on the planet. We're watching all the Nets games. Zed really is, and Zed reports back to me about what's going on.
We is generous for who is watching all of the Nets games.
I'm hitching my chocobo to your wagon. You know? So you get to tell me what's happening with the sports, speaking of games, and all sorts of other shenanigans occurring in the Discord. Anything else you want to add? Anything else you want to plug, Zed?
No, you know where to find me on the internet if you want to talk to me about the things that I talk about.
Cool. All right. Talk to Zed about the stuff that they want to talk about. Talk to me, too, and listen to all the things that we're doing. We've got so much. We've got Star Wars podcasts, Lost podcasts, Marvel podcasts, Avatar The Last Airbender podcast, The Stand, Star Trek. There's going to be an X-Files podcast here pretty soon. I don't know if you heard that news. That's exciting. Mike Bloom and Angela Bloom doing an X-Files podcast. So just a tremendous amount of content. It's sweet, sweet content. We're mining as a resource like the Mako from the Earth.
Hopefully, it doesn't turn Shinra? Our eyes funny.
We're Shinra? No.
Oh, no.
It's not bad. No. And Tifa. Okay. So we are going to close it out here with some more Nobuo Uematsu jams. We hope that you enjoyed yourself. We'll be back at some point once Zed has begun the process, has completed the process of crossing an ocean.
You're
going to cross the ocean,
across
then we'll get back
sea.
Together and we'll talk. We'll have a lot to talk. We'll have a lot more Sephiroth to talk about. You'll have a new friend that you're going to make.
Yes.
And it's an optional friend, but I'll help you make that friend.
Yes.
And then you got to play with a dolphin.
Great.
And then you got to join a parade.
We love a parade.
And you got to go on a boat. And so we'll talk about all of that. And that's what's going to happen in the next podcast. So.
Excellent.
Exciting times. All right, we'll be back at some point. Bye.
Bye.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.